Candy Girl Winter.
Hello, and welcome to the Saladcast. On Saturday, the 20th of April, 2024, I'm your host, Dan Train. Joining me today, Zachary Burgess.
Definitely not Winter. Not any longer.
And Robert Kemp.
Ignoring the Scandi part for a second, what, I haven't even looked at what this thing is, but what even is a girl winter?
A girl winter?
Like, is it well, is the winter itself for girls, or is the winter a girl?
Well, there was Hot Girl Summer, wasn't there?
Oh, is that a thing?
So, not know about Hot Girl Summer?
I assume Scandi Girl Winter means how Scandinavian women dress in winter.
Oh, that's what I think. Okay. I get it. Yeah.
How do they dress? Do they dress sensibly, unlike the kind of people going out in Newcastle in miniskirts?
Isn't it like nice turtleneck, like super woolen jumpers or something?
Like very cozy, fair jumpers. And
yeah, like hygge.
Yeah.
Hygge girl.
Hygge.
Yeah. However that's pronounced. Probably.
Just means super cozy, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Ah, cozy.
Cozy white blonde girl winter.
Right, because they're blonde, because
they're Scandinavian.
Scandinavian.
That's the stereotype, right?
Sure. But it's also borne out by actual demographics. Right? there are a lot of blonde people. Yeah. Because they have Norse power.
Norse power. The best power.
Yeah. What did it give you? Extra wood and food?
Extra wood and food, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's convenient.
The two keyest of ingredients in black and white.
Yeah.
North power.
And it just made a cool sound.
Yeah, it did.
When you activated it.
I can't remember what the gesture for North power was. Was it the spiral? It wasn't the spiral, was it?
No.
I remember just drawing the R a lot in that game.
Yeah, constantly drawing R. Until you realize you could hit R on the keyboard.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same effect. You're like, what have I been doing this whole time?
Yeah, this is a waste of time. I could just push R.
Yeah. That game had so many cool ideas, but whether it actually counted as a game is kind of debatable.
It was tricky. There was definitely ways to lose at a certain point. Like, I think when you got like halfway through the game.
I mean, the bigger problem was trying to win.
Yeah.
It was such a goddamn pain in the ass.
Mm.
When you lost your creature on level 3 or whatever, and you had to extend your influence over the island, I didn't understand how you're supposed to do that.
Rocks people forever. Rocks,
yeah. Right. Well,
and they go, wow.
As long as you didn't murder anyone with them, right?
Yeah, at least
if you were playing the good side, right? You had to throw rocks but not kill them.
Yeah. Presumably, that's the fast way to, you know, to show your. To killing them would give you lots of evil points, right? And would,
I suppose,
sway them in that direction, presumably.
But also, that level had like the additional challenge that I don't know if they told you about it, but that the longer you took to do that level, the weaker your creature became
because it was chained up and trapped.
Yeah, so it would come out. It would shrink as it like it would grow as it leveled up and shrink as it leveled down. So it would actually start to shrink during the if you took forever on that level, which then of course left you in a bit of a problematic state for the next one.
Yeah. Why they thought it was a good idea to take away your creature. I mean, I suppose the idea was...
Mix it up a bit.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Yeah. I think Black and White's problems primarily came from, like, the core idea sounded cool, but then they really didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Hence why Black and White 2 went a bit more town builder-y, right?
But that didn't work either.
A bit more town sim. Don't get hyped for town if you've got Lionhead working behind it, I guess. that was probably the quickest into video games we've ever done. someone got the stat for that. Is that a new record?
I mean, if we're doing mythological creatures, it probably does segue surprisingly often.
I don't think it did, really.
No.
For all of those.
Not as often as you might expect.
Maybe we got more obscure ones. The kind that normally appear in video games.
Hmm. We ended up talking about the legitimacy of said of said myth. Or whether that creature would even function. But there you go. So other than Scandi Girls, what aesthetics are you feeling right now?
Aesthetics? Oh, man. I told you guys about this, that I found a wiki purely for aesthetics.
Yeah.
And I found that the Wipeout aesthetic is called Vector Heart.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Cool. And because I started with finding the kind of Windows XP kind of aesthetic, which is called Frutiger Aero. Yeah, Aero, yeah. Like, and blobs and like sort of tropical fish kind of
color scheme,
color web 2.0 glossy kind of look. Lots of colors, like when the iPod came in, like 5 different shades of.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, all of that kind of look. And as I saw somebody tweeting, well, I want to listen to an album that looks like this, like, image of Frutiger Aero, like the desktop. And someone just said, Madonna, Ray of Light. It's like, yep,
yeah,
that works. William Orbit.
I guess it is that, yeah. Berling, Berling.
Bing. That's Windows 95, though, so that's mid-90s.
Oh, it? Yeah.
It's earlier, because that's...
Brian Eno.
Yeah, one. Brian Eno.
What was the Windows XP login? Was it just boom, 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 boom? Oh, no, was that the log off?
I think that may have been log off. Yeah.
Don't really remember.
No. May have just been the ding, 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 ding.
Oh, it probably was, yeah.
Yeah.
Bling, 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 bling. Bang! Bum, 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 bum. Intel don't do that anymore,
no,
do they?
No.
Yeah, they do. The on like logo. Every advert where they have their logo, wow. It's always crammed in there. Usually like hard cut to just the Intel logo on the last 2 seconds of the advert so they can play that sound effect.
Because they're forced to.
Yeah, right? Because they have to have that, they have to have that bit of branding on it.
Huh. I don't know if I've seen that like for a very long time. Maybe I just don't get those ads for like Intel products. Does it have to be like, if you're selling a laptop that's like got an Intel processor, do you have to do the ding?
Yeah. Like yeah. If you have a Currys advert that's advertising an Intel PC, they'll have that crap, the Intel thing jammed on the end.
Huh. Because I feel like I've seen Currys ads, but maybe they're all for washing machines.
Probably.
Fridges. Not laptops.
They're not quite so computer oriented any longer.
Yeah, I guess not. Well, when it was Where in the World, PC World, presumably all those ads had to have a thing somewhere in it.
But there's no other company that's done that Sonic logo so aggressively as Intel, right? I mean, obviously, there's plenty of examples, but I can't think of one that forces it that way.
No, I guess not.
I mean, there was it's not the same, but there was like that long period where video games always had the NVIDIA logo slash AMD logo.
On boot up.
Right? Yeah.
But that's kind of like a film, you know, the studio logos that come up before a film.
Kind of, but not really, though, because it's not even like the engine of the game. It's just what graphics card it runs best on. It's like, it's not even literally using
some sort of affiliation or like work. Yeah. I mean, didn't they actually use those exact words at one point for some stuff, like works best on?
Yes. Like black and white and hair tech, but only worked on AMD.
Yeah.
That was black and white too, I think.
Or the Sound Blaster, didn't they used to have something like that all the time back in the day?
I don't think they had their logo as much on Sound Blaster.
Hmm.
Can you still get sound cards like that that aren't for like, I don't know,
not like production? Interfaces? I have no idea, actually. I bet not.
Mm.
I bet no one makes those anymore. Because why would you need them?
Mm.
Like the Realtek kind of have, as far as I know, kind of have the market like absolutely sewn
on
up
board.
Because they make the chipset that every motherboard has,
right?
And that just handles 7.1. I don't know that they do like, I don't know how, I can't say I've seen like Dolby in many Windows-y devices,
yeah.
Like Dolby Vision or Dolby Pro, whatever, not ProLogic, ProLogic's ancient, but
something.
Atmos, yeah, that's it,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen that particularly. So I don't know if that's a Realtek thing or if you need some other chipset.
Because Soundblaster had, I'm sure I had the tail end of it where it had that EAX.
Right, yes. Thing. Yeah. I think I had a machine with EAX.
Yeah, that was quite cool.
Yeah. That was when they had to offload all of that sort of processing to the graphics card.
Yeah.
Which is now just all done in CPU.
Yeah.
Not graphics card, sorry, sound card.
Yeah,
EAX was fun. Because you could just, like, I don't know if they still do that, because I don't think I run the full driver set on these machines, but, you know, the Realtek driver set where it has a control panel. Yeah, I don't think I run those. But the you know, the fun thing when the AX came out, obviously you just sort of play with all the crazy like reverb and effects that it gave, that it would apply globally to Windows.
You mean you'd accidentally have them turned on and have to figure out how to turn them off? Yeah. That's what actually happened.
He's like, what? Why is it stuck in bathroom mode? I think that happened to mine. I think it would like default to bathroom half the time.
It sounded like you were in a bathroom all the
time. Yeah, that sort of like close reverb.
Super close room.
Almost toneful. That sort of thing. Yeah, it was nuts. They should have to bother about friggin' IRQ values anymore. Your sound card works perfectly.
Yeah, just randomly choosing from that drop-down box.
Yeah,
is it go through the ultrasound today?
That was one of them. That was one of them. The Roland, wasn't there? There was a Roland card of some description.
All the different MIDI palettes that the game sounded totally different.
Yeah. MIDI sound fonts. Yeah, it was a weird time. I'm glad we're past that part of old computing.
But I suppose PlayStation 5 still talk about their 3D audio and everything.
It's yeah,
still a thing, like,
I don't
care about.
I don't know that, like, since they talked about that, whether that's ever been talked about after the launch of the PS5. Yeah, did anything actually implement it or noticeably implement it?
I think it's a thing, and obviously they have official headphones that do it or whatever.
Right.
But it's like binaural, right, isn't it?
Sure, but then you can just do that for any speaker set, right? You don't need a set of headphones to do that.
But I haven't heard hype about it because that was like a big feature that I think the guy, what's his name?
Cerny
was just keen on it.
I mean, it's a cool idea, like path trace your audio. Like,
yeah, that's cool.
Get realistic reverb. It's not a terrible idea.
That's cool,
but you never hear in reviews of people saying like, you know what's really impressive? How good the positional echoing is in this game. Mm. And
I bet you would if it was like Battlefield or something.
Maybe, but
they did in Last of Us, didn't they? That was the one where they made a big deal about it, but that wasn't even PS5. So
no, but you're right. They did make a deal of that, didn't they? When The Last of Us 1, right? That PS3 trailer, they were talking about how the echo changes based on the rooms and distance of enemies and if there's obstacles in the way and all that stuff.
So what are Naughty Dog doing? Is it secret or are they doing something that...
I don't think we actually know what Naughty Dog are working on at the moment, because the one thing we did know they were working on, which was The Last of Us multiplayer spin-off...
Got canned.
So we don't really know what they're on at the moment. I think the last thing they said was we've still got Last of Us on the brain, but that's not what they're doing. Mm. Or not what they're aiming towards next as their next big project. And, you know, with Uncharted probably being done.
I mean, that seemed like if they do more, it's going to be weird because it would
have to be different
story.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness, that spin-off is supposed to be good, right? That's the one.
Yeah,
I haven't played.
Yeah.
Well, other than the Vita one.
Same here. I want to play that actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reminded of that just today. In fact, just this morning, and it's like, oh yeah, I never did play that one. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't think they'll go back to Uncharted.
Mm.
Jack and Daxter, The Great Return. Daxter for PSP. It's like listening to cheese. Whatever those old PSP ads said. Oh, no, the Daxter ad was, I'd hit that.
Daxter. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Daxter for PSP, I'd hit that.
That's good. Mm. So I had a brief ride in your new car then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's only been brief so far. You haven't experienced the G's.
I haven't had the G's.
I haven't given you the G's.
No.
I gave Zach the G's last week.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, sure.
Impressed as always. Too many screens? Do you think? Do you think there's too many screens?
Not really. I mean, at least it shows the stuff in the usual place.
Yeah. I mean, there are like, if you really count them up, there are like five of them. Six of them. Sorry, I miscounted. If you count the HUD.
The fact that they were constantly updating, it wasn't like a static display. You had like the map on one.
Map in front of me. And I couldn't, you can have the map in the middle as well. Mm-hmm. You can make the middle one. The middle one's usually media for me. I just leave it on that. And I have got a shortcut on the wheel to turn that whole center screen off.
All right. Oh, that's nice.
So at night, you can just turn the whole thing off. But then you've got the little climate control screen. And then each of the little temperature dials is a screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Possibly a bit much. But at least there's like giant dials for that stuff.
Yeah, it's not touch controls. That's way better.
Yeah. Yeah, where there is a button, I like it. But not everything is a button. And the screen is perhaps a tiny bit. For those listening, it's a Jag I-Pace. The screen is possibly a little finicky to use while you're driving. It's possibly a little too small, or at least the layout of the icons and stuff are probably a bit too small to use reliably whilst on the move. So hopefully you don't.
No.
But you know, I can just shout at Google, so that's fine. Just be like, do this, please.
It's all very modern.
It's all very modern.
Yeah.
It's all very modern. I've grown up. Grown up. I've aged into it. I'm having my midlife crisis early.
With a Jaguar.
I don't think this counts.
No. Doesn't it?
You need
it's like a sport.
It's a regular ass car at this point, really. It's not even a particularly like unusual EV.
It's a sporty Jag.
It's not like...
I guess it's not an F-Type. Right?
Yeah, it's not like a hardcore Jaguar.
Yeah. It's not a Porsche. It's not a... it's not a Ferrari. What does the average man go for if they have a...
It's
have
a Porsche.
Is it a Porsche?
Lost in Translation. Did you buy a Porsche yet? And then my dad did buy a Porsche.
Oh, yeah. Is it still a Porsche, do you think? Or is it moved on from that? Like, is like a... Because Porsche I don't think Porsche still make like the Boxster class or...
I think they do.
Do they?
They definitely make the Cayman, which was the hard top Boxster effectively that my dad got.
Mm.
I think the Boxster's still a thing.
Yeah, I can't say I heard anything about it since probably that era. Mm.
Because it was a new thing, right? The Boxster.
Mm.
It was a whatever. Cheaper tier.
Yeah, right? Lower tier.
Not cheaper, but whatever.
But not a 911, right?
Yeah, it wasn't a 911, yeah. Is it called a Boxster because it's got a flat engine, right, where they're boxing?
Oh, possibly.
Left and right.
Yeah. That would make sense. Yeah, I guess it's still that. Because I don't know. But the average man wouldn't be able to afford one.
No.
So it's like, what would they
I think that's why they had it, right? Like the Boxster, because the average man couldn't afford a 911 for their midlife crisis.
Is it just a bike, actually? Is it just like a Harley or something?
Well, not like those cheap.
No.
But especially for if you consider the utility, even of a car, even of a sports car against a bike.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, value for money. A Harley isn't up there, right?
That's the thing. For the midlife crisis for the man in his 40s, 50s, it can't be that uncomfortable. It can't be an actual sports car. That's why it has to be a Porsche, right. You see.
Can't be a racing Aston. Yeah. An Aston might be a...
Aston's a touring car, so yeah. But that's even more expensive, isn't it? Maybe the same as a 911, yeah.
Mm.
Depending. They have a whole tier range, right, where you can go insane or you can go...
Yeah. Well, even the entry-level Astons might not even be...
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Now they all have...
Kia Stinger.
Well, yeah. Now they all have the EV ones in different range classes as well.
Yeah, still slightly blown away by the fact that, like, in a couple of years' time, Jag aren't going to have any petrol cars.
Any petrol cars at all, yeah.
Just EVs. It's, slightly confusing. Slightly confusing. Because the F-Type's great, right? Everyone loves the F-Type. It's a shame. They could get rid of their other range, like the E-Pace and the F-Pace, whatever. I can see why they have a problem there, like them being Jaguar Land Rover,
Right.
Right. It's like, if I was going to buy an E-Pace or an F-Pace, why wouldn't I buy a Land Rover? Or a Range Rover or some description of that. I kind of get that why they might want to phase those out and make Jag the electric brand for those, that size of a car.
Mm.
But the F-Type? Come on, man. That thing's a classic.
Cars.
An old Audi TT. How about that as a midlife crisis?
Yeah, yeah. I think they were...
Not the modern ones, the older ones.
There was some kind of thing where they got maligned at the time because they became associated with drug dealers or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which was not the fault of the car.
No.
Which is a good car, I think. Yeah. But yeah, that design, it was cool, but that is dated.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's gotten an age to it. Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, they're cool. I like an Audi TT.
Yeah, definitely.
I was thinking I would get myself a Honda S2000 for 30 grand.
Well, yeah, all right. Yeah, that's not a bad choice. An Evo? A Mitsubishi Evo?
That's too sensible. That's got four seats. I need like...
Yeah, it's got four seats. Oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
Drop top,
and it's
seats.
Fucking huge as well. Yeah. You'd probably struggle with that in London.
Evo is just a regular ass car size.
I think
it?
They're presumably good. Presumably a good Evo is like harder to find or whatever for a good price.
Maybe, yeah. Well, and I don't think Mitsubishi actually make the Evo anymore. I think I think they got out of that game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a point. That's something I know nothing about. Obviously, I know about Formula E and stuff, but I know nothing about electric car EV rally. That must exist.
That does exist. Yeah. I forget what it's. Well, it's not strictly rally. They do. They have like these big, like almost trophy truck racing in electric trophy truck racing or that kind of thing. I think they call it. They might be Formula Extreme or something. They call it, but it's still like racing. It's not like rally style stages. Yeah, yeah. I don't know that. Yeah, you're right.
That must exist.
Must exist. But yeah, I've not. Not ever heard of it, I don't think. Yeah, I don't know. Don't know.
Man, that must be crazy because those things would be heavy.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
The suspension requirement must be a bit nuts. Well, I think they kind of get away with it in the off-road extreme, whatever they call it, because they really only build those cars to have the battery length that they need for a race.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So they give them just enough to get around the few minutes of racing that they do, and it's not a long race.
No.
So, yeah, maybe the weight is actually lower than you expect. Yeah, interesting. I don't know. Maybe maybe they'll turn up in the next dirt game, if they exist.
Did you say someone's making an indie game that's kind of Colin McRae 1 style?
Yeah. I think it was literally just called Classic Rally or something. I did spot that on my travels. Yeah. In the current trend of everyone trying to make old games again.
Mm.
Yeah. Colin McRae 1 style at that. Yeah. Which I'm vaguely tempted to try and get hold of a PlayStation copy of. Because I really don't remember it that well. I know we used to play it a bit at yours on PC.
Yeah, I had it from one of those. Even when I bought it, it was from one of those replay type publishers.
Oh, right, yeah.
Not new, whatever.
Yeah, kind of on the sort of 20 quid range.
Release, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you guys had 2.0 or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I played that to death.
And I couldn't get used to the handling in 2.0.
Oh, yeah, loved it. Loved 2. 2 was great. And then we kind of skipped, we all kind of skipped 3, right?
Mm.
And then went straight to 4, and 4 was another good one. And then you got Dirt 3.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which constantly encouraging to post it to YouTube. Worst audio thing.
I did play a lot of Dirt 3, to be fair, but that stuff was kind of annoying.
Mm. Yeah, I did play a fair amount of Dirt 3 as well, but not nearly as much as I played with Dirt 2. Dirt 2 is probably the only one I actually 100%ed. I think I did everything that game offered. because it was just so cool. It nailed the style, right? Of all of the Dirt games, I think it was the one that like absolutely nailed the style.
I mean, Dirt 1 had the brown filter.
Yeah, which it was, did, which is a problem. It's a problem to go back to. But that menu was super rad, right? With the arrows everywhere and everything being excessively 3D. And
it was cool.
Yeah, the Codemasters really flexing in menus. They did that across all their games at the time, right? Like the even what was the other one? Grid had a bonkers 3D menu. It wasn't quite as bonkers. You were just in a garage, but all the text and stuff was in like that. A little bit. If you've ever seen the box art for it, the like Grid logo, fat font, when like, but all the letters were metallic and just floating in the air. It was that must have taken friggin' ages to make.
Okay, so what's your favourite game menu? Coolest game menu?
Coolest game menu.
Mine might be just Jet Set Radio or whatever, the first one. Just think it. Just went.
I mean, yeah, but there's not a lot to it, no. Actual menus.
It's just got style.
It has got style. Oh man, that is a toughie. I don't actually know.
I remember the Chronicles of Riddick Escape from Butcher Bay having this like weird metallic... a cube that span around for its menu.
Oh, yeah.
Being kind of cool.
A bit like the GameCube.
Yeah, yeah.
But it didn't go whatever it did. That's pretty accurate.
Have you got one, Zach?
Well, I don't know if it's like necessarily that aesthetic, but obviously Derg has a great menu and a very complicated menu.
Does it?
What do you mean, does it?
Menu?
Yes. The entire goddamn space ring.
Oh, if you're counting that as the menu.
That is the menu.
So I guess more of a hub.
Yeah, but it's got all the... It's like a garage where you go and equip all your shit and then you start the mission.
I suppose, but you're still walking around it and then entering menus. Rather than the whole thing just being a nice,
well, there are some shortcuts where you can pop stuff up without having to like you can press tab.
Can you?
You can press tab and just bring up the map mission map.
Oh, I did not know that.
But I'm not sure you can access it many of the other ones unless it's like maybe there's unbound key bindings you can set, and I'm sure there's a mod for it.
What about Wipeout 2097? Where everything just goes. Just slides out and then explodes back in.
Yeah, I think that was quite influential on maybe
very influential on me at least.
Yeah, I mean Wipeout 3 menu is pretty good.
Wipeout 3, I mean it's so minimal but it is good. It's like the I mean it doesn't do anything. Everything is static but it's and just goes but whenever you push anything, but yeah, it's overflowing with style and what's the word I'm looking for? Just confidence. Oh man, Wipeout made me think of that. Split Seconds is pretty good. As much as I have like sort of I'm not so into Split Second as I get. Controversially, it seems everyone seems to love Split Second except for me. But that menu is quite elaborate. In terms of like its presentation, like everything is on like glass panels and is videoed up to the nines to show you what it actually is and is well labeled and well laid out and everything's logical and makes sense. But it's also set on this like stage which has bits of broken glass flying around it that are refracting the content behind it. It's quite over the top, but pretty well done, which fits that game's entire aesthetic, I suppose. Like the aesthetic is probably the best thing about Split Second. It's incredibly well. Again, yeah, they have a concept and they just roll with it through the entire game. That works for me. I'm sure everyone's going to say like Persona, right? The Persona games, because they're almost entirely menu driven, right? Those things have to be good.
That count is that even the same category? Like that's more like UI than
because
it's not like the menu.
It's not like the thing you see when you press start. I suppose you must see a bit of it. But
well, yeah, sure. Probably all in the same style.
Not for any kind of visual finesse or any kind of actual usability flair, but Pac-Man Championship Edition.
Oh.
Just because of the music.
Yeah. Can you still play that game, or what happened to that?
I think I've still got a working Steam copy.
Mm.
I assume it's still installed to my 360, so it's probably still good. I think the 360 Xbox Live is still live, I think, but the store isn't live or something.
Mm.
So you can still actually, I think that's how it is, or did they actually shut it down? I can't remember. Yes, yeah, so you might have difficulty downloading stuff, but you can at least get to your stuff that's already on it. I can't remember the state of 360. Turns out the state of Xbox 360 modding is pretty healthy, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was obviously, we were talking about it before, like sort of browsing around trying to figure out if I should just pull the trigger on buying or trying to sort out a modded original Xbox.
OG Xbox.
Avoiding the whole problem that I have of the DVD drive dying, because you don't need a DVD drive on a modded box. You just FTP the ROMs to it. Problem solved. So I was looking at that, and like obviously you search for modded Xbox and you get all modded Xboxes. Yeah. And it seems like the 360 scene is burgeoning. There's loads of them out there. Probably an interesting platform to do it on as well, because I guess if people have preserved XBLAR content that you can no longer acquire, could be quite an interesting platform for finding weird stuff. Especially if you can get hold of that E. That 360 E, right? That's the elusive one. E for elusive.
E for elusive. What was the E?
It's the smallest one they did. It was the last one. So they did the launch 360s.
Yeah.
And then obviously they S'd it. And then the E was the very last one they did, which was even smaller. I can't remember. Was it the S that they did that stupid thing at E3 where they had a 360 stood there on stage and they lifted it up and it was just the shell and inside was the S?
Yes, because it was so smaller.
Yeah. It's like it's smaller because it's inside.
Wouldn't have to be that much smaller for that to work, really.
In fairness, it wasn't a huge amount smaller than the original 360, but it was smaller. So what else is going on?
Yeah.
What else is happening, boyos? Been watching anything good on telly?
I've been watching Kirby Enthusiasm.
Oh, God.
It's the last series. And so I'm getting to the final episode of Kirby Enthusiasm, which finally, but you know, it's very good. It's very gentle. Like, he's just, you know, retired, go to his golf club. It's the same as it's been for the past, literally. When did Kirby start? I think 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was around then anyway.
But it's still so funny. I don't know how they do it. I know a lot of it is like improvised and stuff, and I suppose this is kind of a send-off type thing. It's like a victory lap kind of thing. It's like the last season.
Are they doing the thing where they bring back all the old characters?
They will be. Like, I haven't seen... Right now, I'm in the middle of it, and it's just kind of the normal people that you see. There's Vince Vaughn's in it a lot at the moment. But I think the finale will definitely have Jerry Seinfeld and stuff in it.
Right, yeah. If you were watching... was it the latest series of Death in Paradise, and Gnome thought that it was going to be the last season because they were doing that thing, right? Pretty much all of the old notable characters turn off at some point throughout that season. And it's just like, oh, they're winding this up, aren't they? And it's like, no, spoilers, they're winding up that they wound up the lead. They wound up the detective, as they do periodically. So there will be... A new detective next season. We don't know anything about yet, because we know they've renewed for two more seasons. So it's like that whole thing of like, oh, this is going to be the last season, and then it's like, yeah, sorry, hon, it's not. We've got more.
We got more to come.
They're doing another spin-off of that. Like they did. Like, it's not called Death in Devon. I can never remember the name of it, but it is basically that. It's basically that show in Devon, but less good.
Death in Devon.
But there's another spin-off coming of some description. Death in Paradise is huge, it seems, for the definitely. BBC. It's just, you know, it's not serious TV. You just sit down if you want something, you know, a little bit of light murder.
Yeah, a bit of casual murder, yeah.
just cash murder, yeah. There's, I suppose a lot of British detective shows like count as cash murder.
Yeah.
Like Midsummer, I suppose.
Yeah.
Jonathan Creek. There's all cash murder.
Inspector Morse, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. I suppose Morse could be a little darker Morse at times, darker, yeah. And Lewis. What does CSI count as? Does that count as cash murder?
It's
or
like
is
flashy
that...
murder, isn't it?
Lens flare murder.
Yeah.
Aesthetics. We're back where we started. Lens flare murder aesthetic. Let's go.
Yeah!
I was doing that to Miles the other day. He was wearing a set of gnomes sunglasses and was giving off some Horatio vibes.
Okay.
So he would sort of just turn to the side and I'd be like, yeah!
TV.
Horatio.
Horatio.
Yeah, we've talked about this off air, but oh boy, that Christmas episode of The Bear.
Yep.
The Christmas, was it a Christmas episode? I mean, it was set at Christmas. I don't know if it released at Christmas, but that is intense.
Yeah.
And it's a whole hour long episode.
Yeah, it's really long. Because some of the episodes of The Bear are half hour, aren't they?
Most of them are half hour. Yeah, most of them. Yeah.
And so when you get like a full blown one, it's like, wow, we're in it, boys.
Mm. And it is nonstop chaos. Mm. And just madness, and it's like it's an impressive feat. It's an impressive thing to wrangle together, right? Because it's one of those shows where a lot of people talk at once in a sort of realistic fashion, rather than everyone being polite and waiting their turn.
It's more naturalistic in that sense.
And so I'm sure wrangling that together in a sensible way must be really tough.
Editing like, it and stuff.
Well, editing, or how many takes you have to do to get one where someone somewhere can go, actually, that's clean. We've got the audio in a way that we can actually use. You know, that must be so tough to actually make cohesive. What a show. I love it. But as we have said before, like, yeah, season two is a very different beast to the
it's
first
different,
season.
Yeah.
I much prefer the first season. And that's,
I'm the same, yeah. I like season two, though.
Yeah, I'm the same. I much prefer season one, but that's because season one is so good. That even a good season,
it's true,
is struggling,
and they're making a third. Well, of course.
So. Well, I hope so.
Yeah,
and I'm not finished with season two yet, but
no. And like I say, you've got some good stuff coming up.
Nice.
Yeah, but that's an intense episode. I did warn you.
yeah.
Forewarned is forearmed.
But it is great. It is great. And how hype are you for Fast and Furious 3 tonight? We're going to be watching some more Fast and Furious.
I don't know if I'm more excited for Tokyo Drift or for the return of
Vin Diesel in 4. I really can't remember 4, so I'm pretty interested to go back and see which one of them it was.
Because if 4 turns out to be bad, then it's okay, because 5 is supposed to be great, and that's, you know,
I think
next time around.
I remember 4 being okay, right? Because it was when it started to go the way the modern ones are.
Crazy spy movie.
Yeah, but perhaps didn't have quite the bombast that they have now, right? Mm. So it's going there, but hasn't quite got there.
Where they just decided, we're just going to be Mission Impossible now.
Yeah. In cars.
Yeah.
As much as possible.
Yeah.
Yes. We'll get to the cyborg.
Can't wait for the cyborg. I hope it's a furious cyborg.
He's pretty angry. Yeah. He's got a rap and everything.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my gosh. And no, Keanu Reeves is not yet in Fast and Furious.
Yet? He's in it?
No, he's not yet in any of them. But
okay. But he has been cast.
As Shadow the Hedgehog, yes. Which I think is excellent.
Sonic the Hedgehog 3. We still haven't seen Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
We've not seen it yet. Yeah. Do you reckon Keanu's going to be doing like the Christian Bale Batman like thing for, like to play Shadow? No. Like, what voice is he? Because as much as I love that he is Shadow, I don't quite know if I can connect the dots on his voice to Shadow's character.
Because what does Idris Elba do for Knuckles? Does he do it?
He sounds a bit like Idris Elba. Yeah. I don't think there's a huge amount of accent work there.
Well, it's not like Shadow in the most recent Sonic cartoon is all that traditional Shadow either. He's just normal dude talking.
Yeah, he's a little bit, you know, he's deeper than the other characters, right?
Sure, like, but that's not hard.
Yeah, you just need to hire someone with a slightly deeper voice, but... Does Keanu just have to do his, like, slightly understated, whoa, voice, you know? Like, teach me the Matrix voice.
Well, we will see.
Hmm. Did we ever work out who was new Robotnik? Have they not announced that?
Oh, no, I don't know.
Or is Jim Carrey actually coming back after all?
No, he's said he's retired,
hasn't
he? So maybe I'll have a cameo.
That means I need another baddie. How do you have another baddie?
You just have the new guy who turned up and he's just called Eggman now.
Oh, right. So they're two separate guys.
In this universe, it's just two different people who are coincidentally both antagonizing Sonic.
Tricking something happens with an egg in a fridge.
That would be the obvious way to do it.
Yeah, rotten egg in a fridge. And he
picks up the Sonic like quill thing with the electricity and he picks up an egg at the same time. And then something bad happens.
Like the fly.
Yeah.
And then it's his assistant, right? He's bringing him a coffee one day, and
It won't be anything as cool as that. It'll be like he picks up the quill, he picks up the egg, the electricity arcs off the quill and makes the egg explode, and then everyone just calls him Eggman because it's funny. it's not actually going to be anything. You know,
it's not actually a character change or anything. Yeah. There really isn't. Oh god, it's Zavok, isn't it? It's going to be Zavok.
It's absolutely not going to be Zavok.
I mean, they try every time to bring in a new, like, well, recently, right? They keep trying to bring in a new antagonist who is ultimately sort of connected to Eggman, obviously. But
maybe it will be Gerald Robotnik. Since it is Shadow, bring in the Sonic Adventure 2 storyline.
I mean, maybe, yeah. But Gerald wasn't a bad guy, kinda. He did sort of make a giant cannon, and
he did make a giant death laser and planned to blow up everyone,
and then shoved it up a lizard's ass.
and also,
watch our videos.
Was kind of insane, probably judging by the straitjacket and all that.
Yeah, you can watch our series on Sonic Adventure 2 on YouTube. Relive the tale. I mean, maybe, yeah. Or Rouge is actually bad for a while? Like, properly bad? Or are they just going to make Shadow seem, like, bad somehow?
Well, probably. I mean,
And they just spend the entire movie chasing Shadow, and then...
Yes, and then figure out what Chaos Control is, etc.
And then run into Gun.
Well,
and a giant
kind
truck.
Of what the government already is in the first films, right?
It was just the US, isn't it?
Yes, but it's still, like, it's basically Gun. They'll probably develop robots at some point.
Mm. Well, you'd think, like, if Eggman was on their staff role, as he is sort of possibly in the first film, right? That maybe they'd have some advanced robots in.
Well, but the point is, like, they're only just discovering the power, right?
Well, yeah, sure.
Now that Sonic turned up, they're like, holy shit, we can use this energy.
But Eggman had a bunch of cool robots before the quills.
Kind of.
In that universe. And he hasn't even started harnessing the power of small bunny rabbits. Well, I suppose they needed to be like bunny rabbits from Mobius or wherever.
I don't know if that was ever really specified how that worked in that way. What the energy is.
From Flickies.
Well, not even Flickies, but like in like regular Sonic, it's just regular animals, right?
Mm. They might all be Flickies. Like they might,
you reckon? Like it's a...
Because they're all like the same size. They're all like tiny versions of animals. It's like they might all be technically some kind of class of Flicky.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's never implied that they're the sentient ones, right?
No.
Even though it's sometimes implied that Flickies have a level of sentience, right? Like, or intelligence. But I mean, sentient. Yeah, well, I suppose all sentient. All animals are sentient to some degree, I guess. But like, you know what I mean? Not like past some intelligence threshold. Civilized.
Civilized flickies.
Yeah. Unioned. Unionized.
Unionized flickies. they've been working for Robotnik so long that they decided to organise.
Yeah, just form a union. It's like, well, if it's going to be this way, we can organise a better deal.
It does seem like that is always what it seemed like they were implying in, like, that Murder of Sonic Hedgehog with the train, and like how Robotnik was rewarding the robots with, like, this is like, they obviously have some kind of
incentive.
Yeah, some kind of
gamification in the
deal
workforce
with Robotnik. They aren't just things he made. Even though that doesn't make any sense.
Should we talk about the news?
Yeah, what news we got this week?
If we've run out
apart from the casting of Shadow the Hedgehog.
I suppose that the biggest news is the evolution of the term premium indie.
From our discussion last week.
Yeah, like in a strangely timely fashion, after we were talking about how, you know, there's multiple tiers of indie games, we got both Nintendo's Indie World, which is very much the not premium indie world, I suppose, and then the Triple I Initiative, which is, I guess, what premium indie really is, because it's those studios everyone seems to love doing. Oh man, I should shout out to Carl Bosman, because I think he absolutely nailed exactly what this show was. It's like, if Triple I is supposed to be a play on Triple A and them taking the piss, I think they ended up flying a bit close to the sun. But and I agree with Kyle's take on this, because most of what we saw were established IPs getting sequels.
Sure.
Like Slay the Spire 2, and I don't know, I made a list here, but the middle of my list is hidden. Let me get it back. Slay the Spire 2, Wizard of Legend 2, which, by the way, I'm not sure I like their new direction. Like, they've gone like 3D graphics rather than nice pixel graphics.
Well, yeah,
sort of like Hyperlight Drifter to Hyperlight Breaker is doing. You know, I'm not sure I'm into that.
I mean, if I was going to have moved that game into 3D, I'd want it to be like low poly 3D. I would look like Pseudo-Regalia or whatever. You want it to be that like intentionally old school looking 3D.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe PlayStation aesthetic over N64 aesthetic.
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Like PS1 grunge. That would probably do Wizard of Legend quite well, I think, actually, that sort of,
because you could have the effects still be
quite pixely.
Right. Yeah, based, possibly.
Sprite-y,
even in a 3D environment, that'd be pretty cool.
Sprite-y, unfiltered.
Yeah. Use some mode 7.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure I'm into the art direction on Wizard of Legend 2. But yeah, What the Golf is getting a sequel called What the Car.
Okay.
Because I guess, but like, What the Golf had quite a lot of like car driving in it.
Yeah.
So I guess they really just like that bit of the game.
Well, it means there's going to be a lot of golf in this one.
Probably. I mean, classically, it has a pretty good trailer, but it's also a very similar looking game to What the Golf. But yeah, good to see them putting out something else. The three things did catch my eye as potentially interesting to us as a crew. First one being Old World. Because it looks a lot like Civilization. Oh, okay. After the conversation we were having about Civ 6 and Aura. Someone else is having a go.
Yeah, but indie makes it more risky.
It does. Mm.
Yeah, how much are they changing, or are they flying too close to the Civ formula but not quite hitting it? You know, that old chestnut.
Is it just going to be someone's remaking Civ 3 or something again?
Yeah.
in the way that people do.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, someone's having a go. Mouse. That's all it's called. Just Mouse. Not even the graphic novel Mouse. It's not Nazi related. Just Mouse. But it seems to be a boomer shooter, but with the Cuphead cartoon aesthetic.
Oh, okay.
So, like, imagine an FPS, but you're gunning down sort of like gangster looking mice in black and white.
Yeah, I think I've seen footage of that.
It looks pretty cool. It looks pretty cool. Yeah, this isn't the first time we've seen it. It's definitely been about, but yeah, it looks pretty cool. So that showed up.
Are they going to actually use the fact that the original Mickey's out of copyright to put him in the game?
Oh, I wonder. Yeah, if he's like a boss somewhere or Steamboat.
They could write Steamboat.
I mean, they could write something next to a river and just have Steamboat Willie go by whistling. That'd be kind of funny. And the final one, which is... really straddling the line between indie and triple I. What would that be?
Probably like not triple A, though.
Like triple F. Something like that. The Rogue Prince of Persia, which is, I don't know, this is weird to me. Like, so the timing is weird in particular, given that only a couple of months ago, a 2D Prince of Persia game came out that... Mm. People seem to quite like. I can't remember. Lost Crown? Was that the subtitle? I can't even remember. But yeah, that was definitely a Ubisoft joint.
Sure.
But the Dead Cells developers, Evil Empire, are coming along and they're doing one, a 2D Prince of Persia game that is supposed to blend Metroidvania elements with a bit of roguelightiness, as I guess the Dead Cells developers are used to. Yeah, and that's going into early access very soon.
But they should probably hurry up and finish that other game first.
Yeah, which I can't even remember the name of.
No.
But that's a Hades-style roguelike, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just like...
With multiplayer, that's its, like, quirk.
Well, maybe multiplayer, I suppose.
It looked a bit like it had multiplayer.
Yeah, maybe. Could be some weird team-switching thing, I don't know.
Mm. That's true. I guess it could be. I mean, it looks really cool. I think its aesthetic is... I mean, I think the last Prince of Persia game trailed pretty well. It was not... I don't know, I think that EGX demo we played was pretty underwhelming, but that may have been just a bad slice of the game. I'm not quite sure.
I don't know why they chose that bit for us.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't feel... Yeah, it didn't feel representative of... Or at least I don't quite get why everyone is so high on it off the back of...
Mm. What we saw.
Yeah, off the back of what we saw. Yeah. Whereas, just immediately you look at this thing and go, yeah, that's a good look. It's okay, it's slightly confusing that all the humans are purple, but I'll let that slide and get behind it. I think it looks pretty cool. One to keep an eye on. But as I say, because it's going into early access, don't know if it's actually coming out this year. Probably a year-long process. Dead Cells was in early access for friggin' ages, wasn't it?
So. Yes. Well, and continued to get updated even after it released.
Yeah, yeah.
Forever.
Before they considered it V1. That was my picks from the triple I. Things I will say about this showcase, there was very little faff. It was very fast.
Straight to it.
Like trailer, just keeping it going, like very little. There was only a couple of talky where some of the developers did a quick talk to camera, but it was like usually less than a minute of that.
Mm.
And there was no presenter for this thing. It was just all, it wasn't like overly explanatory like Nintendo stuff. Or anything like that. Going back to Kyle, he had some problems with the language they used where they did decide to take a little break, but they did that by just text on screen, like laying out text in fun ways to be like, are we still hype? We've got more things to come. Ha ha ha. Let's go. Scroll the text. That kind of stuff. It's just like, does this make you feel more hype? No, I'm not sure it does.
they just do it to hold it together.
Yeah, just a little bit of glue or a little bit of a breather, I suppose, in this thing. That's quite nice. Let's just get it done, guys. Let's get it done. So there was that. And Nintendo also did an Indie World that you and I watched last night.
Yep,
Of which there really wasn't very much to talk. There is nothing to like latch onto here. I mean, Europa kind of looked cool to the point where I'm not sure I believed that was running on a Switch in a sort of I don't know, it's quite open worldy looking game, but your character is quite floaty and seems
and
to
moving fairly fast through the world.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. It looked too sharp for a Switch title, if I'm being
an
honest.
An indie one anyway. Yeah,
I mean. Well, yeah, given that I think in the III initiative they showed one of the things that was in it was Chia, you know, that kind of almost an open world but combined with like almost Mario's Cappy ability thing, but with a Moana vibe, you know, try and explain what that game was. But yeah, they had that coming to Switch as part of the III initiative. And I mean, you could tell it was running on Switch, you know what I mean? That had that, like, this is clearly on the edge of being playable look to it. Whereas Europa looked sharp, you know? So, yeah, maybe that footage wasn't actually Switch footage. I don't know. I'm holding my skeptics card up to that one, but the game looked all right. The other thing I sort of noticed was, I mean, Zach, have you heard of Anton Blast?
Kind of, in like the context of it being
Pizza Tower.
Yeah, compared to Pizza Tower all the time.
It seems identical, just less good looking. Like, and it's like copying the aesthetic almost outright, but it seems even harder to see what's going on.
Yeah.
So how did this get made?
How did this happen? Like,
I think they might have always been parallel. Like, I think I think I heard about Anton Blast before Pizza Tower came out. Like, I'd heard about both of them before Pizza Tower came out. So I don't know what
is this another case of like where it happens with movies where two people mysteriously get the same idea at once, so we end up with two very similar films released?
Possibly
Convergent Evolution type. Is that what they call it? Where there are just, you know how there are just loads of creatures that are exactly like crabs, but they evolved completely independently.
Right, but then came back to the crab.
It's just the right, they're not related at all, but they're just, that's just an optimum shape of creature.
Oh, interesting.
So there's like many, like I can't remember how many, but there's like five different things that are basically crabs, but are completely unrelated.
Huh. Fascinating. Yeah, I wonder. Like, you maybe this started out with a completely different look to it, but was a very similar get in, get out fast-paced platformer.
I mean, and then they looked at Pizza Tower like that as well in the past, I guess. Like, Pizza Tower wasn't exactly the first one to do that style of.
No, I'm sure it wasn't
platformer. Obviously, I mean, it's technically, if you want to make some vague amount of comparison, you could even say like Jazz Jackrabbit was basically that in some ways.
I mean, Jazz was fast, but it wasn't a get-in, get-out platformer, right?
Like, well, not the specific layout of that.
And you had guns.
Yeah, but that was... You have guns in Pizza Tower at some point. So.
Oh, do you? Okay.
And realistically, like, if you're talking about the guns in Jazz Jackrabbit, it might as well just be like a shoulder charge, because you're basically just firing at stuff as you're running at them most of the time.
I suppose once you leveled up, that was the weird thing about Jazz, right? Like, because all the other guns needed ammo, so you just, like, once you got the rapid fire, like, charged up on your main gun,
yeah,
just use that, just hold the button down and run, and everything in front of you dies.
Yep. Use the ammo for bosses. Classic.
We go back to Jazz for like a video.
Maybe.
Does that fit? Because it would look a bit weird on modern PCs, right?
Didn't we? So.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Yes.
We did do Cyril.
I think Jazz Jackrabbit is a bit more famous than that.
But we're more familiar with the sequel, right? And I don't think I ever played the first all that much. But because I think I only had the demo, right? It was a classic shareware demo, that first Jazz. Everyone had that. But, yeah, Jazz 2, we had the full thing. And I think that would be a bit weird on modern machines, because it does, the bigger your resolution you set the game to, and I think it basically supported any resolution you threw at it. But the game doesn't scale. Yeah, yeah. So Jazz would be actually tiny in the middle of the screen. But maybe that's a good thing. Like, I don't know how much the game was designed for how much visibility you have.
Mm.
Well, I mean, the problem with that is, like, at a certain point, the level just stops, because it's a tile set based thing. So, much like Sonic, if you zoom out too far, there's just nothing there.
Or did it not camera buffer, like at the edge of the world, or like so the camera just stops scrolling?
I don't know about that, but like, you know, if you've been, if you've like, because a lot of jazz was like secrets and shit where they use the, it like, it's layered.
It was layered, so you'd have to blast the hole in the wall, or it would use its, at the time, pretty interesting lighting.
But like, you could probably, if you zoomed out, if you had a high enough resolution on that, you could probably start to detect where the secrets are by just seeing like, here's a big lump of pointless wall.
Oh right, if you can see where the wall stops the other side, yeah.
Well, like, if you can see the other side, if you could just see like this bit of, there's tiles out here that usually you wouldn't see for any reason, so there must be a reason.
There must be something out there. Yeah. You're probably right. Yes. In your house. Music went.
I thought it was in the Nintendo thing, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was just secondary. But what about SteamWorld Heist 2?
Oh, that was its, yeah, that was its, the last, the very last thing in the Nintendo Direct. Like, yeah, so, I mean, you're the SteamWorld guy here.
Well, I mean, it was the best new thing that SteamWorld did. Not that they'd done much new things, I guess. It was that.
Build?
It was that and Quest and Build, so
yeah,
that was the best of those three for sure.
what was SteamWorld Quest?
It was the sort of Slay the Spire like RPG card battling. Yeah, I think it was cards. Yeah, card battling thing.
Oh, I don't remember that at all. Right, yeah. So you mean other than Dig, obviously?
Yes.
Heist is the. Yeah, I mean, you played a bucket load of that, right? Was it 3DS?
Yes. So that would be nice to have more of that.
Because you like 100% of that thing, yes. Right? Because you went hat hunting.
Well, I don't remember whether I got all of the hats. Maybe I did. But I definitely did all of the like missions and stuff in hard as well also.
Jeez, right.
Not that that's super hard, of course, because it's a SeaWorld game. Those are generally not that difficult.
Is it cheesable?
But what's
did you find a cheese?
Is well, I mean, there are some things in that game where certain powers seem super overpowered.
Mm.
And obviously laser sights just make everything about that game much easier.
Yeah. And they definitely seem to show a bit of that in the in the trailer.
I mean, maybe like if you were going to make that second game, maybe you'd balance it for that, because like that's actually what's cool about that game. But like having to try and aim shit manually, especially in the first game, it's just like that kind of sucks.
Mm.
You want to have the levels designed in such a way that making the cool ricochet shots is the way to win,
right?
And then just let you do it.
Mm.
Like, don't make it
difficult for it to. Yeah, were you limited by like the stylus like accuracy? Or
no,
something?
It's because when you were aiming, your aim wavered slowly backwards and forwards.
Oh, did it?
So you had to time it. So if you were trying to aim that visually without the laser sight, it was much, much harder to do that.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that, honestly. Yeah, but I didn't play the game, so yeah. Who cares what I think?
I mean, if you balanced it in such a way that like having a laser sight all the time was balanced for that, then it would probably be cool.
Would that be is that a skill you'd have to give to a character, right? As a sort of trade-off thing. It's like, well, you could laser sight
that's how it was in the first game. It was like a gun attachment, basically.
Mm.
Or only certain guns had it, possibly. But yeah, I mean, if everyone had it all the time, but you balance the fights to account for that,
could they balance it by having maps that would have like laser-proof surfaces,
non-ricochet surfaces,
yeah,
maybe to make it more difficult to hit certain angles.
Mm. Yeah, like, oh, that's a foam wall. That's actually going to just absorb your bullets.
But what's the law going to be? Because now they're pirates for some reason, which, like, they're on a planet again. Earth blew up. When does this take place?
Was it in space?
Heist was.
Yeah, but this one didn't. This new trailer, I can't remember.
They only show the map briefly, and it's just like it's on ocean. They're saying we're out in a boat.
Yeah.
And it's just like.
And there's boat combat.
Well, yeah, there's boat combat. But like, where's this in the timeline? Because Heist was the furthest in the timeline, I guess, because it happens after SteamWorld Dig.
Oh, when they get off the planet.
Which is when the planet blows up. And I guess Build, I didn't finish Build, so I don't know how that turns out, but that's also in the...
That must be in that.
In the approach to the planet blowing up sequence.
Yeah.
Although I think it might also, I forget what the story was actually like, what the end of the story was like in Heist, but I think there was some implication that maybe you were going to reassemble the planet in the end of Heist.
Okay.
So maybe that has happened now.
Oh, right, I see. This is the new frontier.
Yeah. You reassembled the planet and then landed on it.
Yeah, cool to see it back.
And, you know, I prefer that aesthetic of, like, the robots and everything.
Well, does Steamworld count as premium indie?
Maybe at this point, because how many games they've put out.
Yeah, and that it's another sequel. It's a sequel to a well-established franchise.
It depends what they do with, like, the voices and everything, though.
Right.
It's weird how, like, almost every one of these games, they've done it differently. And it's just like, I think they've, especially Build, where it's just like it has a toggle where you can switch it to actual voices or the robot voices, except they did the robot voices in a bad way as well. Huh. So it wasn't nearly as cool. But it's Heist had probably the best version of the robot.
It's a bit like Star Fox 64, where you can put it back to the original style. Grip, 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 grip.
Yes.
Who wouldn't want that?
Well, I don't know, but then you miss out on do a barrel roll.
Oh, that's true.
Do an Aerolon roll.
Yeah, but that's the problem of, like, you only want that because it's bad voice acting, but you don't actually want the bad voice acting either.
But it's not bad voice acting, it is hammy voice acting. And that's not necessarily the same thing. It is, yeah. The best. Well, it was voice acting, it's the best.
So when does SteamWorld Heist 2?
I don't think they said.
Come out?
Probably not super far away, I would imagine.
You play that
one? Well, if it's in a Nintendo show.
Yeah, it's a Nintendo show and it's one of their games, which don't take that long for them to usually
put out.
You play
on Steam, right? On PC? The original?
No, the original was a 3DS game.
A 3DS? Oh, okay.
Which is, I guess, why Nintendo are showing this one, right?
Yes, it'll be on the Switch, presumably.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
But whether that will come to other platforms, I didn't pay attention. And they tend not to show that in a Nintendo show anyway, whether it's coming or other things.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have said there would be any problem with it coming to PC, but I don't think they've released many of the other games on multi-platform. Like, they usually commit to one.
Build and Dig definitely came out on
Dig
a lot,
eventually
on a lot of
did, though.
Yeah, but I mean, Dig started on Steam.
Yeah, and it wasn't like immediately.
I think Dig 2 was quicker to spread around, and I think Build was pretty much day one that it came out on everything. Because it came out on Game Pass for a bit, I think.
Yes, but that's also PC.
Sure, yeah, but it's, I mean, Xbox Game Pass.
Yes. And in some ways, that game just inherently makes slightly more sense for the controller.
Right.
Than the mouse.
Oh, is it because the town is a bit gritty? Or?
Well, no, it's because of the way, because that aiming system is like you're rotating the pivot, basically. So it's not like if you were doing it with a mouse, you'd be pointing at a place, but then your aim would be wavering across where your pointer was, I guess.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
Rather than the other way, you're rotating the angle that you're aiming at, which made it feel a bit more obvious, a control system. And also inherently that slightly less preciseness is why that game was balanced that way.
I think, yeah, like having the waiver is probably a good way in some ways to get around the sort of XCOM style percentage chance.
Well,
thing.
That's why it didn't have that. Like,
yeah, because the percentage chance thing, I get why it's there, but it's also pretty annoying.
That's why that game was all about the ricocheting shots and everything. It was just like everything had one health and you just had to hit them.
Mm.
Well, not everything had one health. A lot of things had one health.
Headshots, anyway.
Oh, right. Sure.
Pew, pew, pew.
Indie news.
Indie news. That's kind of what we are, isn't it? We're indie news. Independent news outlet.
It's us.
We are indie news.
Are we triple I? No, we're double I at best. No, mate.
I don't know if we've even dotted the first I.
Yeah, okay, fine. Lowercase I.
We're just a stick. A rectangle. We're not even standing upright. We're a slant.
We're still getting through the news, though. So
still get through it. Yeah. Got anything else? Still get through it. I mean, Take-Two layoffs, blah. Bit of big news, bad story, but it's the same story we've been hearing since 2023.
Yeah.
Take-Two were just a bit slower to do it, which, I don't know, good on them for holding out. Is that how we have to look at this now?
I don't know.
Because, like, absolutely everyone is doing it at this point, except Nintendo.
Well, that we know of.
That we know of.
I bet Nintendo would do their layoff silently. I don't think they'd bother to announce it.
I mean, historically, Nintendo have actually done the thing where if Nintendo had a slightly bad year, the management would take a pay cut.
Sure, but Nintendo haven't even done a Direct yet, so they haven't had a chance to announce anything.
I mean, didn't they do a Direct, like, before Princess Peach Showtime came out? I think we've had a Direct this year.
I don't think we have.
Like in February or something.
No, because they skipped their January one and there wasn't...
Yeah, I thought we had one, but...
Like... The only time we saw Princess Peach was like last year when it was first announced.
I thought there was one.
I thought we had one this year.
Yeah.
But it wasn't interesting. You know, it was kind of a nothing Direct. I'm going to look back through my notes.
Okay.
Oh, we had a partner Direct.
Well, of course. That's why we've had indies and partners. We haven't had an actual Direct. We're still waiting for them to say anything about, you know, Metroid Prime 4 or fucking any other game.
Yeah,
the Switch 2.
Yeah.
You might actually be right, unless I didn't write notes for that one.
That would seem unlikely.
Yeah, it does seem that. Yeah, all right, fair enough.
I thought there was a Princess Peach one, but why would we write notes for that?
Yeah.
I don't think they... Because we discussed...
Maybe it was just a trailer on
its own. We were theorising that they might do one that was purely for that game in that way that Nintendo does, but they didn't.
Unless they talked about it in the Partner Direct and I just didn't write it down. Nintendo's partners. We partnered with ourselves on this game.
Is that the news then for this week?
Pretty much, yeah.
Let's move on to what you've been playing. Starting with Zach.
Pass me my phone because I need my list
need
now.
Your notes.
Let's see. How charged is Zach's phone?
Probably sufficiently.
I know.
I don't know. The screen's still black.
No.
It did turn on briefly at one point.
Apparently, it's maybe a third charged.
Oh, okay. So that should be enough. For like, how old is that phone at this point?
Very old.
Kind of amazing, like, given how phone batteries actually last and perform.
Well, it's not like it's been on continuously that entire time, or anything.
I guess, yeah.
It's been off most of that time.
I have been rocking the option on this Galaxy to be, like, only allow yourself 85% charge to preserve the battery, which is a thing you can turn on. Mm-hmm. And I know Apples do that automatically,
they
right?
Do it, as they, yeah, as they, get they don't old, even
as,
tell you.
As they get older, yeah, which yeah. I... do not approve of. I'd rather they told you what the state was, or what was going, or at least there was a way of seeing it if you were interested.
There is a battery health thing.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
I remember there wasn't when that controversy kicked off, right? The first time.
Maybe they added it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that must have come later. But yeah, so and in fairness, this has been I think that has worked because this is over 2 years old now, and it doesn't feel too different from when I first got it, which is nice. I mean, it's a Galaxy. Galaxies have never been super great on longevity, I don't think. Well, this is the regular Galaxy rather than the bigger ones. I think the bigger ones are better for lifespan. But
sure.
Yeah, it seems all right. I have been tempted now that it's in its third year to be like, I might change this after another year or two. Maybe I should turn that option off and reap the benefits of my patience. Or maybe I should make this thing last forever.
Well, it's like, how much do you want a new phone? How quickly can you destroy the current one to force yourself to buy a new one?
The only thing that tempts me about new phones is the camera tech now, because this thing is powerful enough for everything I want to do on it. And I don't game on my phone. I don't. I play Wordle and I do Lingo, and that is about it. In terms of my gaming.
What language do you do? I'm
doing Japanese.
Japanese, okay.
I'm learning hiragana right now.
Nice.
That shit is hard. And in fairness, I don't know about you, you do Duolingo for like French and stuff.
Yeah,
I
have done.
Is it too slow, because it like it doesn't seem to progress through topics or expand your vocab very quickly at all.
Oh, no, it's pretty slow, yeah.
Yeah, like especially if you're only doing like one,
they added
one
more.
A day.
It used to be quicker, but they added more content, I think. And
yeah, it's very samey, same thing. And I know that, I mean, the Japanese on Duolingo is a bit weird because it does that thing where it gives you the like Englishified, I forget whether that's got a name, but I can't remember what it is. The sort of Englishified, yeah, the Romanized, but it's not that. It's got another name, mm-hmm. but for Japanese. But yeah, they give you the Romanized version of how it's said alongside the actual Hiragana version, or where Hiragana makes sense. There's sometimes where it doesn't, like the word pizza, I think, which is just pizza in Japanese, but I don't think they can represent that in Hiragana because there's no sounds for it. Yeah, so they present it alongside. So I'm not really learning through that particularly how words look, which is sort of partly why I'm doing this, because a bit of me wants to know a bit more about actual Japanese characterization.
Yeah,
partly so when I see some Japanese in anime or in non-localized games or Yakuza, where it's partially localized, right? And but all the because it's in Japan, everything's still Japanese in the world. Like a little bit of me wants to be able to look at something and go, I know what that is. But Hiragana's probably not the character set for that
they have on street signs and stuff.
Yeah, because Hiragana is the phonetic one,
right?
Or one of the phonetic ones. So, but you know, Japanese has the Chinese thing going on as well, right? Where there are just this character is the word.
Yeah.
And that stuff it hasn't touched on. But anyway, I don't think I'm necessarily learning the language, the writing side of it very well. Mm-hmm. But no, getting the core structure, I think I'm getting it.
Cool.
But that's because I've done the same phrase about 50,000 times at this point.
Yeah, maybe that's what they just judge that's what's necessary to actually get it in your brain or whatever.
And it teaches you some really weird words as well. It's like, why do I need to know the word for lawyer as like the first lesson?
Maybe it's for Ace Attorney games or something.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe that was like some kind of AI like feedback where like what words do people spend longest learning so that they just float to the top and it's like everyone wants to know how to read Ace Attorney games in actual Japanese.
Maybe. I wonder if they picked them because maybe they're phonetically distinct.
Mm.
Right, so slightly easier to tell apart. Because there are some sounds in Japanese that when you hear, when they do like, oh, what have you just heard test, they sound incredibly similar to each other. And it's just like, oh, I typed the other one of the two things it could sound like.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
What have you been playing?
Well, one of the things that I played was Rocket League, and I only wanted to bring that up because they did a patch, and it's like an actual patch, not just like a content thing like they've obviously been continuing to do all this time.
Sure.
So it's like, oh my god, an actual patch that includes something new. They've patched in the ability to, on the little nameplates above your teammates, it now shows how much boost they have.
Oh.
In a little circle.
Oh, that's possibly a game changer.
Yeah, right? Maybe.
Like, unless you're, I guess if you're playing online and you're not having a team that communicates.
Well, sure. But like, I mean, it saves you telling people you don't have any boost, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
They can just look and see.
Oh, that's interesting.
But so there's two problems with that is like, for the benefit, obviously, it's like, you know, not, you don't have to communicate that and you can just see it even if your teammates aren't communicating. But equally, there's the opposite side of that where it's like, now you can look at your teammates and be like, what the fuck are you doing? It's like, it's even like, you have so much boost, why are you not boosting? Or, yeah. Well, how do you have no boost, you idiot?
Yeah, why? You've got opportunity to go get it. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's double-edged, for sure.
And then on the other side of that, of course, because it's Rocket League, the patch broke some shit. because they can't fucking patch that game without somehow cogging it up. So now, like, sometimes the nameplates just don't appear any longer. Okay. You know how, like, at a certain distance, the name disappears and it becomes a little diamond?
Oh, yes, kind of.
Yes, you don't even really remember.
No.
You wouldn't notice it because you wouldn't realize you'd seen it all the time.
Yeah, I just remember how the nameplates look. I don't remember the shortening.
Yeah, but like, so normally when you're at kickoff, it's like the people who are closest to the ball, you can see their nameplate, but if their teammates are in the goal position, it will just be a diamond.
Huh.
But that, when they made this update to show the boost, obviously it doesn't show the opponent's boost for obvious reasons.
Sure.
But like, now sometimes there's like a certain distance away between the full name and diamond where the whole thing just disappears entirely.
Oh.
So now, like, it's especially bad at kickoff now because you actually, a lot of the times the name, like, not all of the nameplates are showing, so you actually have to, like, have an actual look and be like, what kickoff formation is this?
Yeah, well,
there's been so many people just completely cocking up kickoffs in the last couple of days because of this.
Because everyone uses the nameplates to see where everyone is.
Yeah.
Rather than looking at the card graphics, I guess.
Well, it's because the cards are like tiny at that point when you're that far away on kickoff.
Yeah, interesting.
It's just like, God damn it, how did you cock this patch up? It's the tiny.
Surely that can't be a big patch to do.
You would hope.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like it must be because, presumably, the way that system works, because it's also dependent on the length of the name, I think.
Right.
So it doesn't take up too much screen space.
Yeah.
So I assume because they've added this like icon into that box, they didn't account for it compared to the length of the name. So it like, as it gets to the point where it would be getting rid of the name and turn it to a triangle, it's not accounting for this extra length that's been added, so it's just erasing the entire thing in this like transitional period.
Maybe.
It's like, you've done something dumb on your UI there.
Maybe.
But yes, as usual, they patched something which is theoretically useful, apart from it's going to need another patch to actually fix the horrible bug they've introduced.
Interesting. It also makes you wonder why they've done that now.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe they were just looking for something to do instead of more crap for Fortnite.
Yeah. I mean, there is that. That is surprising in itself. Like, given, yeah, what I mean.
I mean, like, a lot of the stuff.
What are they doing other than that racing game for Fortnite? Like,
a lot of the stuff in the current Rocket Pass all is like, when you unlock it, it says underneath, it's like, you can use this in Fortnite.
Oh, really?
It's like, great. That has now been very fully implemented.
It has actually happened.
Almost all of the stuff is also in Fortnite.
Can that happen the other way around? Can you find, stuff in Fortnite that also appears in Rocket League?
I mean, you'd have to be playing on a linked account, I guess.
Which, if you've got an Epic account, then you have.
If you were playing on that same account, I guess, because for our Steam version of Rocket League,
mine's linked.
You didn't necessarily have to
an Epic account.
Well, you had to. I forget how it worked. I think you had to make one, but if you were never going to use the Epic store anyway, you just made one. You didn't have to download the Epic launcher or anything.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Obviously.
But then if you cared about this stuff, you would presumably put that same Epic account into Epic, and then you'd have a linked account.
And obviously, if you were coming from the other side and you'd only ever played Fortnite, you'd just be playing Rocket League on Epic anyway, because you can't even buy it on Steam.
Right, yeah. Because you get the... there is a Rocket League backpack you get if you... played Rocket League in Fortnite. You get the ball as a backpack. Yeah.
Right.
Or is it the glider? I don't know. I forget how Fortnite works. It's been a while.
That was Rocket League's patch. I finished the grind of getting perfection in Stardew again.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And achievement. Yeah, I got the achievement. All the achievements again, 100%. Back to 100%. Whoa. Got those extra 5 that have been added. And I think I talked about this the first time I did it, but like the last thing in getting perfection, well, it's not technically the last thing, it's just probably the last thing you're going to be doing, is like you have to build the golden clock, which just costs 10 million. So you have to just have 10 million gold on hand to be able to build it.
Mm.
And like, that's just far too much. I feel like that's one thing that I would have thought they should have rebalanced, because it's like, that just, it takes forever, and it's like, it's not interesting, because it's only gold. You just optimize whatever your current best way of making gold is, and then you just do that for like months in game. Like, but the trouble is, like, I was thinking about it, is they can't not do it like that, because if they made it take, I don't know, if they made the giant gold clock take actual gold bars, then that's going to force you to have to like go mining all the time rather than doing what you want. Like, it would force you to do certain things for a long time. Whereas if it's just gold, it's like you can do whatever you want to earn that money, I guess. You just have to have a lot of it. But then it's less interesting, but I can see why they wouldn't want to force you to do one specific part of that game. Make it take 10,000 fish or something.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But yes, 10 million is probably too much. It probably could easily be 5 million and it would still be fine. I mean, I guess it does slightly make that final perfection achievement marginally more valuable in terms of rarity. You have to go through that extra effort to grind out that 10 million.
Whatever you did to get the 5 million, you've got to do again.
Yeah.
And you got to... Is that in time limited, like, so it has to happen?
No.
You can just carry on the post-game.
Yeah, so all the perfection stuff is just whenever you get to it.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
But the other problem with having to grind 10 million is, like, it's the last thing you're probably going to be doing for perfection, but it's quite possibly not the last thing to spend money on. Like, at that point in the post-game, I guess, when you're going after the community center stuff and all that, going towards perfection, there are still certain things you can do which are not, like, beneficial. They're more just, like, nice, like aesthetics or whatever. Like there's a thing where you can just basically pay to build someone a house.
Oh, okay.
And it costs like 500,000. And okay. I'm just like, well, I'm not going to spend that on that. I need that for the 10 million I'm going to buy this clock with.
Yeah.
So you don't get a house, person. And you're never going to get a house because once I finish this achievement, I'm just going to leave.
Yeah, I don't need to make you a house. And there's no real benefit to give.
No actual benefit to it. It's a cool thing you can do, but like the game inherently kind of makes you not do it. And there's a few other things like that as well. Anything that costs substantial amounts of money in that endgame period. Even like you can buy... I guess this is sort of a holdover from when the endgame perfection stuff didn't exist. But one of the previously most expensive things was the like warp scepter, which was like... It was like the warp totems that would teleport you back to the farm, except it was infinite.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned this. Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, you have the totems, which are like single-use items, which will warp you to various different locations, depending on which one. You have the obelisks that you can build on the farm that cost quite a lot of money, like half or 1 million. Those will teleport you infinitely to those locations, but only from the farm. And then you have the warp scepter, which teleports you only to the farm, but is infinite uses. But you can use it from anywhere.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that used to be
your emergency rope.
Kind of, yeah. That used to be like the most expensive thing in the game, I think, back before the whole perfection thing. So that's like 2 million. But like, you're never going to buy that now. Because why would you spend 2 million to build that when you're trying to save up 10 million?
Yeah. Wow, and this...
And also now...
Less tallying makes it quicker for you to get that 2 million back.
But also now, because of the loot crates thing that I mentioned before, you get quite a lot of warp totems out of those.
Oh, okay.
So you just get them for free anyway. So you don't even need... I had more warp totems than I ever used, just sitting around in a box that I'd accumulated for all the loot crates.
You never actually bought any.
No, I never made any or bought any. And then I built the obelisks eventually anyway, before I'd even used up all the single-use item versions.
Right.
So it's like that warp scepter is always completely pointless, like building a person's house is always completely pointless. So yeah, I feel like that could have, you know... I don't think they could not have the clock just cost money, but also it costs far too much money. And if you wanted to have the main goal of the end game be this huge amount of money, maybe make the other things not cost money. Yeah. Like building that person's house should have cost resources, not money.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, that would make some sense. If you're building the house, yeah.
I mean, usually all the other house upgrades and stuff cost resources, usually as well as money, but you could have lent it more towards resources in that case, maybe.
Yeah, true.
So yeah, that was the end of Stardew.
Yeah.
Got through that. Oh, yeah, like, I did have...
Is there any more patches expected for Stardew?
Well, the thing is, they've already patched it again. To add even more content to this current patch. Like, they've just patched it to add more layouts to, like, the mines and stuff. So the layouts on each floor, there's more random options.
The procedural generation has been...
They're not procedurally generated. They're, like, fixed, but there's a pool of them or whatever.
Oh, I see. Right.
But there's more different versions in that pool now.
Yeah, okay.
So I haven't even seen them because I'd already finished by the time this next patch came out.
Who do we mean by they at this point?
Well, that one guy, and I guess the maybe if he's still getting any assistance with the multiplayer fixes to make it fully functional in multiplayer.
Still him, isn't it? So, bad news for Haunted Chocolate 2.
Well, still, yes, apparently. And I did have a weird moment in Stardew towards the end of my grind for money, where it's like, it's weird, because of the way time works in that game, like the things that, the way time passes, but it doesn't, there's certain things that causes it to pause. It's like, I was trying to get as much money as I could in per day or whatever. And I had all my farm stuff going. And I was like, oh, I've got some free time. And I guess I could just fish. And then I could put the fish in the smokers, which makes them more valuable. And then sell those and make more money. So I was doing that for a while. But then I realized that, like, in game time, that's more efficient because you're just getting more stuff and selling it on a per day basis.
Right,
but in real time, that's probably not actually as efficient because when you're doing the fishing mini game, time pauses.
Right.
So every time I'm catching a fish and doing that mini game, in-game time isn't passing, but I'm spending real time doing it.
Spending time, yeah.
So it's like, at some point I was like, hang on, I probably shouldn't be doing this, actually. I should probably just go to sleep, and then it will go to a new day, and then I can harvest my crops quicker.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it depends what your min-max... What form of min-maxing is valuable to you at that point?
Well, real-time, probably. If like I said, because you're only doing this grind for cash, it's not... You've kind of got yourself set into a precise, you know, plan. Not really much is changing. Mm. You're just growing the crops and then shoving them in kegs, usually. Making the absolute shit ton of wine, because that's the optimal way to make money.
Okay.
Really?
Yes.
I thought you just had these kegs lying around. I'm just going to put some sugar beet in them or whatever.
Make sugar beet go in the jars for pickles. Pickle everything that isn't a fruit. Fruits go in the kegs to make wine. Vegetables go in the preserve jars to make pickles. Pickle anything that's a vegetable, no matter how gross that sounds.
Pickled broccoli.
Yep.
Pickled swede.
Well, the swedes aren't in the game, but sugar beet are.
Okay. Pickled sugar.
I mean, I guess they aren't technically sugar beets, but they turn into sugar if you put them in the mill.
I mean, beetroot is normally pickled anyway, right? When people eat it.
What is it in?
It's vinegar, isn't it?
No. Yeah, well, I thought it was...
Or is it just juice?
Maybe.
What, the beetroot is just sweat in its container.
But then where does that extra juice come from?
Yeah.
Whatever it is, it stains everything.
Yep.
Yep, it's the worst. I mean, okay, there are definitely things worse than beetroot, but flavor-wise.
But yeah, that was like, it was...
Not a parsnip. Fuck parsnip.
No. I definitely got to the point in Stardew where it was just like, I had my farm laid out in a way where it's like, I have this route that I just ran around in the morning, clear everything up. Go to the left and go to my animals, go to the middle, pick up all the shit out of the fish ponds, then go to the sheds down the bottom for all the brewing, and then use the teleporter, the on-farm teleporter that you get to go back to the farmhouse and then just leave to go and do other shit.
Mm.
The farming part of it was done in like a couple of hours in the morning, 6 till 8, and then you leave. Wouldn't that be nice for a farmer?
Well, the routine was only 2 hours.
Yeah, you just get all your farming done in 2 hours, then you just have the whole rest of the day to do whatever the fuck you want. Yeah,
that'd be nice.
And still make hundreds of thousands of quid a day.
Yeah. But what do capers count as? Are they vegetables?
Probably fruit in the game context.
And in real life context? No idea. Like some kind of, what do peppercorns count? Because there's like capers in the same category as like peppercorns. Is that spice at that point?
I don't know what spice doesn't really mean anything in terms of it being a fruit or a vegetable. I think it's probably just coincidence that fruits are all sweet and vegetables have the spice.
Wow. Are they sweet? Is a lemon sweet? I suppose it has a sweetness.
It is technically sweet, I guess.
But there's the sourness that overpowers the sweet.
That was all of Stardew.
Olives sweet? They're a fruit, right?
I was reading about oil the other day. You know, Brent crude, the price has gone because of war in the Middle East or whatever.
Right.
Up, and it was like, that's characterized as sweet, light, or whatever oil. And it's like, why is it called sweet? And it's like, sweet means less sulfur content. Yeah, but it's like, why does it mean that? And then it's because they used to taste it and it tastes sweet. They taste the oil. And
right.
Like,
yeah, this... like crude oil, not like,
yeah, crude oil.
Not like olive oil.
No, crude oil. Yeah, yeah.
Right, right.
Sweet like crude. Yeah.
Sweet like crude oil. Sweet like crude oil.
Sweet like Brent. Sweet like Brent crude.
There was that. And then I started playing Captain of Industry because I said I was going to probably. And that patch happened.
You did.
And that's not substantially different, really, for all this hype about this patch. Obviously, the new map that I'm playing on is... Well, the thing is, it's huge, which I'd already said, like, the hugeness of the maps is maybe not the problem. The variety was the problem. So, I mean, having a new map is the good part. It being huge, not so important. Mm.
And does that have the variety you were looking for?
Well, yeah. And also, like, the other thing that's slightly... It applies to this map and some of the old maps because they've updated them, but they've also added, basically, starting positions. So even on old maps, you can start in a different location and therefore... It's like a new app, I guess. But yeah, apart from that, the hugeness of the map, especially, well, I'm playing this new map on like the easiest starting location, and it kind of is maybe too easy, but I'm not sure. The trouble with that game is like, the hugeness of the map means there's a huge amount of resources, which makes getting the resources easy. Like, there's just a huge mountain of coal and a huge mountain of iron, and I'm just gradually chipping my way through it, and it's like, right. I don't have to worry about moving away infrastructure anytime soon because this pile of iron is going to last forever.
Yeah, it's just going to last longer.
But then, like, on... Like, if it's too... Well, the resources are fine, but then the thing that is weird about the balance of that game is like the farms are huge and you need the farms to supply your population so you have workers for all your buildings. So what you actually need huge amounts of space for is just like huge amounts of farms, and they're like big and flat, and they have to be flat. Like, this game doesn't, there's no, you can't get away with like a slopey farm or anything. It just has to be perfectly flat, so you better get your diggers and terraform everything perfectly flat. But then, so on like this easy starting location, you just have a huge flat plain, basically, that you put all your farms in. But then on the harder locations, you're in like little valleys or whatever, and you have to cram it in. And it's like, that's kind of not a good way of balancing that game, I don't think. Like, it's sort of challenging, but it's more just kind of annoying.
You just got to wait till you've got the funds to do it at the right time.
Well, it's just like you just have to wait for your diggers to terraform things, which I'm always doing anyway. Like, I'm doing that on the easiest setting. I'm like, I want this hill out of the way, so I'm just going to have my diggers gradually move it over here, basically. And it's like, I'm already waiting around for things like that to happen, even when I've got all this extra space. So don't, if I was in a constricted environment, I'd probably be even more annoyed by it.
That's interesting. Does its terraforming actually require somewhere for the land to go?
Yes, you just dig it up and put it somewhere else.
Huh.
But typically what you do is just like you dump it into the sea and make new land.
Oh, right. Of course.
Chinese style.
Yeah. Or in a lot of cases you like actually use quite a lot. Like even just dirt and rock you can use quite a lot of if you set yourself up the right way. Like the rock you can turn into gravel to make into concrete, and the dirt you can turn into bricks, and therefore you can use those industrially if you want. But you kind of actually might want to save a lot of that for either dumping into the sea to make nice like flat edge docks, because obviously you want a lot of docks for your cargo ships at a certain point. So that's one reason that you're going to kind of naturally always just make it like a line along one edge of the map where you're just making a rock wall and filling it in behind, a seawall kind of thing. But then you're also going to need some of these resources for like ramps and stuff to get over all the plateaus and get to other parts of the map, which is sort of where I'm at now. My copper mine is sort of digging into this giant crater, which is what this map's main feature is, because it's called Armageddon. It just like has a giant impact crater in the middle of it with like a shit ton of oil at the bottom. Hmm. But in order to get to that, you have to get in there. So like my copper mine is tunneling into the, like, the crater wall, but then I'm also going to have to build an actual ramp that the vehicles can drive down into the middle of the crater. Hmm. So I'm going to need a bunch of extra rock and stuff to chuck at it. And I also need to like build a land bridge over to one of the side islands that has the gold on at some point, because I'm sort of approaching the point where I'm going to need gold now and getting to that point in the tech tree.
At what point do you rank above captain?
In the difficulty options.
Oh, is that where it is?
Yeah.
So it's like captain the base level.
No, captain's medium, I guess.
Admiral of industry.
Yep, yeah. Admiral of industry is the highest. Sailor is the lowest.
Sailor of industry.
I'm just riding the waves of industry.
Well, those, like, they've also updated that, like, the difficulty selection, and those options are sort of like the like picking defaults. But then the very next screen as you're setting up the game is just now you can go into it all individually, so you can actually configure all of. You could configure most of it like this before, but they've added some new options. But you can configure all the individual difficulty stuff. Set whether vehicles need fuel or not, basically, and all that kind of thing. And speaking of vehicles, one of the things that has been added to this patch is hydrogen-fueled vehicles, in case you want to be fancy. Except you get them quite early on, but I don't see any reason to use them until, like, super late game. Because, like, you can make hydrogen... In the earlier parts of the tech tree, you make hydrogen by, like, breaking down oil. But if you're doing that anyway, you might as well just make diesel. Like going from the step that makes diesel, the next couple of steps to turn it into hydrogen. It's like, why would you do that? The vehicles just run on diesel.
Whereas is there a pollution mechanic?
Yeah, there is, but it's not super important. Mm. Especially, it depends how. Obviously, you can, like, if you want less vehicles driving around, start building more belts. But then the belts use power, but then your power plant can be making less pollution in other ways or whatever. Like my power plant is currently running on wood, basically, instead of coal. Mm. Which I think does slightly reduce the pollution somewhat. Hmm. But you can also then get into like exhaust filtering or whatever and just like pull the exhaust out of the furnaces and then like filter out most of the pollution that way for some cost of power or whatever. So you could convert to the hydrogen vehicles, but it seems more likely that you're going to use them in the super late game, because then you can... Once you get to the late game, you can get solar panels, and then from the solar panels, you could run like electrolysis and just make hydrogen out of water, therefore converting solar power into vehicle fuel without any other steps.
Right, yeah.
So I'm like, surely that's where they're going to be useful, but you do get them super early. I guess if you just randomly had extra hydrogen lying around, you could fuel a couple of vehicles with it for a while, I guess, if you wanted. So there's that. Oh, and then the other thing, so I've now that I've seen the like surfacing mechanic of being able to lay actual surfaces around your factory or whatever, it's like they've given you a lot of options to make it look really cool. Like there's a lot of different textures, and you have like the ability to like paint lines and stuff on it. It's not really like, they're more like symbols, I guess, but they are like lines and hazard stripes and all that kind of stuff, so you can just draw whatever you want on there, make it look as a cool industrial site as you want, make little parking bays that the vehicles will never use because they're not actually real or anything, but make it look like there are, put double yellow lines on this thin street even though the vehicles just stop on it all the time, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's no cops in this town
and they don't collide with each other anyway, so you can fit as many vehicles as you want down the tiniest hole. So yeah, those are kind of cool, and putting it like under all your industrial buildings makes it look really cool as well, and you can make it like, you know, where the molten channels of metal are coming, put the hazard lines along the edge to make it look more cool like that.
Yeah.
But that's all completely pointless, as I said before, because the only bonus that the surfaces give you is to vehicle maintenance when they're driving on them. So putting all this stuff under the buildings is completely pointless.
Right. Yeah.
You only actually want it where the vehicle's driving, but then the problem with that is they haven't added any like pathfinding weight to the surfaces, so the vehicles don't try and drive on them.
Yeah, that's a problem.
You just have to, like, you just have to look at where the paths the vehicles are naturally driving, because obviously normally they're driving over the grass and it, like, degrades it into dirt so you can see where there's lots of traffic. Mm. So then you can be like, I'm just going to pave over that bit. But that also doesn't allow you to make nice, neat roads, because they're just, like, sure, driving in random zigzags across the map and diagonals and all other crap.
Yeah. Weird.
So as I said, it's like this whole system seems really weird, especially when in the future there's going to be like actual roads,
yeah,
that are specifically for vehicles to drive on, and the vehicles will specifically pathfind through. Like,
maybe it is purely an aesthetic thing, really.
And it's weird also because it expends resources. Like, you actually have to pay concrete to lay the concrete.
Sure.
Which is like, balance-wise, you would think that's there's this whole new sink to use all your resources on. So, like, I don't think they rebalanced the actual, like, recipes of concrete or anything to account for that. But so far, I haven't really had too much of a problem with that, even when I have been tempted to build roads and stuff all over the place.
Hmm.
I guess I never used that much concrete beforehand. And also, again, this map, I've got this giant limestone mountain that I'm just carving gradually through that I'm turning into concrete, so it's not even a problem. I've got so much of it, it's never going to run out either, no matter how much I pave this shit.
Just start at the top corner and draw,
yeah, it, yeah,
for a big square.
You could do. That would probably look pretty ugly. So yeah, I'm getting to sort of the same point that I've always got to that game, where like you get to gold and you get to microchips and then it gets annoyingly complicated. Well, I feel like this time I've got about, again, obviously, because I've played this bunch, I've got, yeah, a better handle on balancing the like workers versus the food situation. Because I think I mentioned this before when I talked about it. It's like the game doesn't incentivize you to unbalance yourself, basically. Like, it's very easy to get to a point where everything is balanced, but then you can't do anything because you don't have any excess of anything. But it's not actually that difficult to then, like, unbalance it. Like, if I need more workers, I can just be like, well, all I need to do is, all I need really need for more workers is just put down another farm so they have enough food to live, and then just build the house, and that's it. But you actually have to sort of make yourself do that, rather than settling into a perfectly even state of everything in balance. And, you know, if you're a crazy person like I am, you do some math. Be like, how much wheat do I need per person? How many more farms is that going to actually take, right, so I, yeah, can, yeah, build only exactly as much as I need?
Only terraform and build. Exactly.
Yep.
So, how much food do I need before my population get angry and start to revolt?
Yeah. I think I also mentioned before, that's also kind of, even that math is sort of annoying because of the way different foods count differently towards how much the population eats. So if you've got like potatoes versus bread, they're in the same category because they're carbohydrates, but then like they proportionally get eaten a different amount. So really what you have to do is start supply. When you're making a new type of food, you basically just have to guess how much they might want, start supplying it, wait for the numbers to appear, and then be like, okay, now I can actually have a number that I can aim at. And it also then adjusts all the other foods. Like, if you start supplying bread, but you've only had potatoes before that, suddenly they're going to be eating like half as much potatoes, right, because, yeah, then you now have bread as an option.
Exactly, yeah. That any new food takes away from the only food you would be eating.
So then you go around and rebalance all your other farms as well.
Gotcha.
Or you just let them overfill and then only worry about it when you start eating too much. But then if you're supplying fertilizer, then you're going to be wasting that fertilizer if you're not eating it all.
No. Not my fertilizer.
Yep. I'm not even using as much fertilizer as my whole diesel plant makes. I'm just burning off half of it.
Not my stink dirt.
I guess that is actually, thinking about it, this is probably something I should actually do now. It's just come to mind that I'm burning off, because I'm not using very much fertilizer because I have so much space for farms, I can just make more unfertilized farms. Just use more of the land.
Sure. Get the same.
Why
yield.
Does the phrase unfertilized farms sound wrong to me? Like,
but
I don't know.
Because of that, I've got a full tank of fertilizer and I'm just burning the excess. But I'm not actually burning the excess fertilizer. It's like slightly further up the chain. I'm burning the excess ammonia. so I'm just flaring it off. But what you can do with that is you can electrolyze the ammonia and get hydrogen out of it.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, wait, I should probably just make hydrogen that way.
And have a feedback loop.
Put that into the vehicles. Mm. Make some hydrogen vehicles and use it that way. Shit, I've been wasting all that hydrogen.
Build another truck.
So yeah, that's all. That's Captain of Industry's new patch. It's not actually that different. And I haven't actually looked at the map editor or the community website thing portal to see what the new map situation is like. I mean, it hasn't been out that long, so I expect it will take a little while before people become pros at it or whatever and start making the real fancy shit.
Mm. Other-shaped craters.
Probably. There's probably going to be a lot of craters.
Massive, massive mountains. I mean, that is opposites.
Well, that is kind of... Well, one of the maps already was a giant mountain.
Oh, yeah.
Because that is kind of the way you... Like I said, because you have to build on flatland, having holes or mountains is kind of the inherent... That's how you make the map difficult, essentially.
An entire level that's nothing but irregular undulation.
There is some maps that have that as well. Where it's just like, here's a nice flat plateau, except if you zoom in, it's not actually flat, it's all lumpy. So you actually have to send your excavators up there and shave the top off it. So that's that. And that's all I played.
Just those two things.
Yeah. And Stardew was the first week of that, getting to the end.
Well, I too only really have two things this week.
But you already finished Yakuza, right?
Yeah, so I haven't played any more of that. Oh, well, I was tempted to make a joke about it and be like, I've been playing Yakuza 0 again. It's like, no, I haven't. I haven't actually gone back to it.
Right. You could have been playing the next one.
I could have, yeah. God. I mean, we made the mistake of watching some stuff about Infinite Wealth. Admittedly, it was a donkey video last night, but like, oh my God, I want to play that game so bad.
But it's ready and waiting.
I know, it really is, but I've got games to get.
Games to get through.
Yeah, what have I got? Well, Ishin is in theory skippable, right? Because it's not core storyline.
Yeah.
But so it would be 6, then 7, then 8. So it would be 3. Oh, no. Sorry, I forgot Gaiden. Right. Yeah, so it would be 4.
Well, Gaiden is also kind of skippable, I guess.
I don't know. Like, because presumably Gaiden must happen before Infinite Wealth, because Kiryu's in Infinite Wealth, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
Whereas Ishin is obviously like just a feudal Japan total. It's like a play, basically. Yeah. You got to treat it like a play. I can't wait, but yeah, I've got too much Yakuza to get to, and I'm too much of a purist, I suppose, at this point. I need to do it. I need to do it in sequence. I need to understand. I need to feel what they feel.
Yeah. You need to know when something is new and important.
Yeah, exactly. And as we noticed in some of that donkey footage from Infinite Wealth, I'm like going, oh, that guy's back. Oh, that guy's back. I know those characters.
But they might have been back for 3 games at that point.
Exactly. Exactly. No Yakuza updates this week. No Forager updates this week either.
You've given up on that.
I have fallen off, and it hasn't drawn me back since it got too grindy.
Yeah.
In fairness, I just haven't had a huge amount of time these last couple of weeks.
It seems like.
Yeah. So I've been a bit busy, but the so what I have been sinking my time into is I'm still continuing to play Penny's Big Breakaway.
Right. How long does that game seem to be?
It's longer than I thought, actually.
Right.
It's longer than I thought. And also, because I don't think I'm too far from the end of its like actual core level progression, but I am finding my like that percent, the percentage complete seems surprisingly low. If you go look at that,
count like everything or something?
I haven't figured out there's like 6 things to do in every level, right? There's 3 hidden pieces to go find and like 3 jobs to do for the denizens I've forgotten what the name of this place is called. Macaroon. On every level to do, and I've done most of them as I've been going. There's a few levels where I haven't got them all, so I'd go back and do those. But I've also found myself going, because every level has a score challenge as well to meet, and so I found myself going back to some of the early levels and trying to hit that score challenge, which is pretty fun actually, because you kind of, they're not unlike Sonic, right, where it's almost entirely time-based, like, it actually does require you to worry about getting a good combo, doing all of the things in the level is beneficial to you, so getting the pieces, getting doing all the jobs in a single run as well. So it's not all about the time. I don't actually know how much of an impact the time has. I don't think it's a lot on if you're going for a score run. So yeah, going back and doing those has been pretty fun. I'm not going through that stuff very quickly. It is quite hard. Yeah, Donkey video be damned. It is actually quite difficult to do some of that stuff. He's just very good, it turns out. But yeah, I'm still loving it. I think it's great. But it's kind of one of those games that I'd prefer playing in a relatively short session. Like, spend maybe an hour in it and I'm quite happy for the day, pretty much. Like, so it's but I am really enjoying it. I do think it has the odd occasional control hiccup that's a little bit hard to wrangle, and like, yeah, it can be sometimes a little funky to like get the yo-yo to do what you want to do. Or there are spaces where there are times where you do actually kind of want to beat up an enemy, and you might accidentally double tap the yo-yo button, and which will fling it out and then flings you out. Yeah, and so you might actually accidentally charge yourself off a cliff. Yeah, which is a bit frustrating. But on the whole, sometimes, yeah, you hit a job that you haven't, you know, on your first run through of a level, and it's a timed job, and by the time you've figured out what you're doing or you've read the description of what the task is, it's like, oh, I've wasted too much time now, and this is going to be too difficult to do. But then you do the run again, and it's like, okay, no, I know I'm doing this time. I can do it. But generally, yeah, I think that game's pretty damn good. I think they are continuing to patch it. I think I've noticed a couple of changes creep in since I put minor things, like little tiny UI changes here and there. But, that could just be me noticing things after the fact. And there are a bunch of like very short challenge levels to unlock, the star globes, I think they're called, but they are very short. They're sort of reminiscent of do you remember the Mario a cappella levels from Sunshine or something, like sort of like they're just quick little platforming challenges. But you buy those with the things you find in the levels. So there's a whole bunch of those, and those all have score challenges as well, so that's probably adding to that percentage. It's a good game. It's a good game. It's got some tunes in spots. It's got some tunes. It's good.
Always helps.
Yeah. A little bit unlike Lego 2K Drive. Doesn't really hit in the music department. So yeah, that's the other thing I've really been playing. Because it's kind of filling that I don't need to think or be particularly invested sort of segment of my gaming life. I can see why that game didn't score
right
as much as it looked like it potentially might be. I don't know, it's presented pretty well. Like, the Lego aesthetic works. Maybe it's not as out immediately awesome as the Lego movie, right? Because the world seems fairly naturalistic, but it's got Lego in it, right? Everything is Lego. I don't know how you feel about that, but they do the sort of present of the cutscenes are all sort of like very reminiscent of that kind of like Lego's current slapstick animation style and all that kind of stuff. They do actually seem to land most of that. I'm not sure the writing is that good. It's like clearly trying to be funny, but it's not consistently good. Like, it's all right. I don't know why. I think one of the funniest things in the game so far is that one of the news presenters is called Parker Carr. I don't know.
That is kind of funny.
Yeah, it's a good name, right? Or the occasional fact that you can randomly talk. There's a horse that drives the car at some point. It's like, I don't know, that's kind of cool. that I didn't realize had a voice until one moment where he just suddenly went, oh, hi, yes, I have a horse. It's just like, oh, okay. But yeah, and it's sort of doing the Forza Horizon thing in its own weird way. Like, in its, it presents you in these open zones. There aren't many of them. There's four.
Oh, okay.
And one of them is quite small, but in them you can stumble upon little quick challenges to do.
Forza style, yeah.
Yeah, like here's a very quick time trial, but with a certain rule or something. Like, oh, you can do this loop three times as quickly as you can, but you're not allowed to hit any fences. Make sure you jump those fences because you can jump. Or make sure do this course in one continuous drift or something like that. There'll be these little mix-ups on, like, so they're not all just time trials. And there's, like, in classic Lego fashion, there's a whole bunch of collectibles everywhere. So there's a bit of a collect-a-thon going on, and you're trying to figure out, how do I get to that? How do I do this? How do I jump my way up this awkward mountain to get to this thing? I haven't quite figured out why you'd want those collectibles other than to check them off the list. I don't know if I've actually particularly gained much through doing those yet.
I feel like that's normally how it is in the Lego games. It's like, collect a million pieces for no apparent reason.
Yeah, I kind of felt like it was more compelling in... I still think Lego City Undercover might be the best one of those I've played, right? Mm. And it's... I think it was more compelling in that game to go out of your way and try and figure out how to get to the things.
Maybe that's because you're exploring a city and not just driving a car.
Not just driving a car, yeah, you might be right. Like, there are certain things that actually have, like... there are certain things that I think feed into each other in a slightly more interesting way. Like, so that every now and then you come across these weed patches... And if you were to...
That kind of weed, presumably.
No, not the good weed.
Set them on fire.
Yeah, no Skrillex plays.
What was that, Far Cry 3?
That was Far Cry 3, yeah.
There was a similar mission in GTA San Andreas, wasn't there, where you were
Yeah, I wouldn't have got that far in San Andreas. But they're like the one major thing that bogs your car down rather than you just driving through and it smashing. Weeds, for some reason, are super bad. So eventually you get a lawnmower that you can switch to and you can cut those weeds down. And then if you do it, and those weeds then turn into magic crystal things that instead of slowing you down, actually fill your boost. So then you can do it. If you go into a race where those weeds were, those weeds will no longer be weeds on that racetrack. Oh. And so actually there's kind of an advantage to scoping out the area before doing things, which is kind of cool. I mean, the process of chopping the weeds is kind of tedious because, you know, you get your lawnmower out and you literally have to sort of play Lawnmower Simulator and sort of actually go and cut them down. So all of that sounds, for the most part, sounds pretty good, right? And the core racing is Mario Kart-esque with a little bit of like Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed, minus the air part. There's like street, off-road, and water are the three disciplines here, rather than ground, air, and sea. But it doesn't quite pull it off. And I think the key problem is the handling. I don't really think the cars handle all that well or feel all that satisfying to drive. It's not as tight as a Mario Kart, right? I don't feel like you have the same or even a Sonic, most kart races, I guess. It doesn't necessarily feel quite as like I have full control over it here. If you get into a drift, it is quite drifty. Mm-hmm. You sort of have to lead the drift in the sense that, like, if you know you're going to have to turn sharper, you want to do that earlier than you expect. So it feels like it takes a little while for the car to hit that steep angle. And even then, it's maybe a bit too physics-y in some ways, because if you're doing that, you can be going too fast to maintain that drift around certain corners. But it has a control problem in the sense that your brake is on the same button. So if you're turning and you hold brake, you go into a, like, I'm maintaining my speed drift. To actually brake, you have to hold the button and not turn. So I think there are certain corners in the game where it feels like, I'm not quite sure what the optimal way to do this. You do get a quick turn button as well, but that's kind of intended for you to do like rapid 180s or something like that.
You're stuck.
Yeah, kind of like a handbrake turn. Mm. And so I presumably there might be a way of tapping that so you take the turn quicker rather than drifting it, but the game encourages you to drift it because you earn boost through drifting. Mm. I don't know that it really comes together there. And the power-ups aren't all that inventive either. You get like a homing missile, you get something that fires forward blindly or backwards blindly. You get a spider's web that's basically the banana peel. You get an area of effect, wow, that just isn't as cool as Blur's, you know. Because very few can be as cool as Blur's, wow.
Or any of the weapons bees.
There aren't any bees, no.
Disappointing.
I mean, you activate them on the B button, but... It's not quite the same. There's a ghost power-up that is considered the advanced power-up, because when you're ghosting, you can pass through other vehicles, but you can come out of the ghost at any time, and if you come out inside someone, then they'll blow up.
You can telefrag.
You can telefrag, yeah. It's a good way of thinking of it. So I think that is its biggest problem, and that it doesn't In the racing, it doesn't necessarily feel right. I don't really like how the boats handle either. They don't feel quite boaty enough, but not as tight, but still not tight, right? There's something weird about how the boats feel. That doesn't seem... And then the distinction between off-road and road doesn't really feel like anything at all. It's just an excuse, I guess, to have two different car types because they didn't want to do air. I guess, or some way of doing air. So yeah, I don't know that it all comes together. And then it's compounded by a few presentation issues that are, and general structure that are brought on because this is a 2K game.
Really?
DLCs.
Monetization and a billion counters and several currencies and a drive pass that is ever present even if you don't have it. And that stuff is a bit insidious, because right from the start you're encouraged to go to the garage and Unky's Emporium, and you go in there and you go, ah, right, this is where if I want to buy new car models and things like that, and it's going to cost me like 10,000 bucks to buy a car, or brick bucks they call it, 10,000 brick bucks to buy a car or to buy different pieces if I wanted to go into the garage, which is basically the build your own vehicle mode.
Yeah,
which I haven't really played with, but it seems pretty extensive. And there's like tutorials and stuff. If there's a vehicle in the game you like, and you'd be like, oh, how's that actually made, you can go through the Lego instructions on how to make that is pretty cool. Yeah, and it will take you through how that comes together. Yeah. But You have to own the car in your garage, I think, to do that, which means you have to have bought the car. Mm. But it becomes apparent pretty quickly that 10,000 brick box is quite a lot. Like, so I've managed to earn... I'm a good chunk of the way through this game, I think, and through the story mode. I don't know. Well, I assume I've made it to Class A races pretty quickly, and that's the fastest class that I know of in the game, but I haven't played all the races and stuff like that, and I've only just got to the last of the base game areas. There is an extra area, but I don't know if that's DLC or not, so I don't know if I have access to it or if it was a post-launch update, because there is some stuff that's post-launch. Some of it's clearly marked as this is post-launch content, so you can see actually that this was added afterwards.
Right, you can see right there.
Occasionally you'll speak to a character that refers to the mysterious fourth extra area as oh, that doesn't seem to be there right now, but maybe it'll be there in future somehow. You know, is okay. Implying that it was post launch, that they had planned to add it later, you know, stuff like that. It's a little on the nose in place. The game knows it's a game and it will point that out, blah blah blah. It does that whole thing. But yeah, so there's a lot of the collectibles and things you find in the world seem to be in service of you slowly gaining bucks and slowly gaining experience or slowly gaining drive pass points. If you find a note, a floating note in the world, that is worth 5 brick bucks. And you win a race, you might get 100 or 2 brick bucks, and it's like, It's going to take you a while.
It's going to take you a while.
So where I'm at, I have 60,000 brick bucks. That means, like, over the collection of, I think, a couple hundred Lego cars in the collection, I could have bought six at this point. Doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. And the rate you actually unlock things through the main story is very slow. I really haven't gained that many vehicles through just playing the game. Yeah, it doesn't feel good. Feels a bit predatory. A bit 2K. And I think the most annoying thing, actually, all that aside, because I don't actually know how much, they don't make a huge amount of impact. Most of it is aesthetic, like, because it's a vehicle of a different shape, but it's probably going to handle mostly the same. There are different stats to vehicles. There are the weight classes you might expect from a kart racer. And it will highlight those, and you have a limited ability to add a perk to be like, oh, I want a tiny bit more handling, or I want to be slightly more destructive in my off-road vehicle, but at the cost of health on my other vehicle types, blah, blah, blah. You have a little bit of finagling there, but they are incredibly subtle to the point where you do not feel them at all. Kind of making the whole, why would I want another vehicle thing, almost pointless anyway, so... other than the fact that it looks cool and it's Lego. And even more annoyingly is that whenever you gain any of that currency, even during a race, because you might gain a bonus by just blowing someone up,
right.
It presents that information almost dead center in your field of view. Yeah, so it will just say bricked and then give you a whole bunch of plus this, plus this, plus this, like right where you need to look to drive the damn car. Why would you do that? Why would you not just like total it up at the end of the race or something?
I mean, Burnout kind of did that with like takedowns or whatever.
That was better positioned. That was a bit higher up the screen. Sure. So it wasn't really where you were needing to look to drive. Yeah, sometimes this is dead rare where you need to be looking. And it's... it's such a shame. Because it feels like they are so close. If they just like, it's a good idea, and it's just they didn't spend enough time on the execution, and they spent far too much on the monetization and around the edges nonsense that you don't care
probably
about.
Probably because they were told to.
Because they were told to by 2K. Yeah, absolutely. It's I don't actually know who the developer. I can't think who the developer behind this was at the moment, but. Probably some 2K internal studio, but it's a bit of a bummer. But in the same breath, I do kind of want to still keep playing it because it's kind of mindless and it's just a nice, it's a relaxing time in its own weird way.
Not every game has to be long.
Not every game has to be great. Yeah, it's goodish. Sneer.
Goodish Lego.
But yeah. No, doesn't fulfill its potential. So I think that was it scored like mid-70s in review scores, something like that. That seems fair. Swimming in sevens
at the moment.
That's pretty much it. That's all I've been doing.
Yeah.
Didn't get any chance to really spend or at least by the time I had a potential window to play some RoboQuest with Zach, I'm like, it's pretty late and I'm pretty tired. I'm gonna Lego for a bit.
Well, you know, I probably wasn't going to be around much this weekend. I mean, this week, because I was also kind of ill.
Oh, are you?
Yep. Especially on Tuesday.
You didn't catch my horrible series of colds.
No, it was probably some kind of food poisoning, judging by how it went.
Well, I had like a few days of that as well, so like maybe it's not a food poisoning.
What did you guys eat?
Oh no, it was like staggered, not at the same time. But oh damn, maybe you were. Yeah, maybe it was a virus after all.
It definitely seemed very food poisoning.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought at the time. But
I was like, well, it's because it happened quickly, relatively speaking. Like I woke up and it was fine, and then by like midday it was like something's going on, and then by the afternoon I was like, let's start throwing up.
Right.
Oh man.
And then I threw up like four times.
So when I got it, like I had the sort of, it wasn't quite the same, but I woke up thinking I was fine, and then after small amount of movement around absolutely chucked my guts out. And then did not feel fine.
Yeah, I basically spent that whole rest of that day throwing up and
it's
everything
not
coming out of me.
Yeah. Anyway, I described purging.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad the purge is done and you're back to being in it. Maybe
mostly
an admiral of industry. Maybe just a captain.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't think I'm fully back to full 100% yet.
Full admiralty on your way. And are you what's the brick master from, what's the Lego movie? Oh, he's like master the one, builder. Isn't he? Isn't he like the chosen one, like equivalent?
Oh, I forget what his, what he's referred
like
to.
He's like a master builder or something.
Yeah, once he gets hold of the Fraggle.
Yeah.
Or prevents the Fraggle. The Craggle, yeah, that's it. From Lord Business.
President of Business. Cool. All right, well, thank you for joining us for this podcast. We also do videos. Which you'll find on YouTube. The place for videos on the internet, if you've ever been on there.
For the last 20 years.
Was that a tagline at some point for them? The place for videos?
No.
No, I don't think they ever did a cheesy... Well, they broadcast yourself was the YouTube one.
Oh, yeah.
So we broadcast ourselves this way and also the YouTube way. I'm afraid we're not available on Vimeo. We don't have any real player content.
Oh my God, real player.
I still have some real player files.
Yeah, I bet I do somewhere.
I'm afraid we're strictly YouTube. So check us out there. Happy Salad. Whereas the podcast is a bit more democratic. It's just MP3 files, but we're also available on your standard, wherever you get your podcasts, except maybe Spotify. We'll figure that out one day, but you can get us on wherever you found this one that you're listening to now. But
yeah. If you're already listening to it, you can continue to do that.
Yeah, and we'll be back with another one of these in 2 weeks, so we will catch you for that.
Boop, boop.
See ya.
You got a whoop in your Zach?
No.